This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome to the show. Good afternoon, everybody. John Murphy, Donald Jones, from our One Buffalo studio. Here's our show, this mess of papers right here. We're going to sort this out between now and 3, Donald, and have a good radio show over the next 3 hours. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. Early happy Easter to everybody. We're here for the next 3 hours. There is no show here on Monday. On Monday, we will be off for Easter Monday. Mm-hmm. What do they call that? What's that called? The day after Easter?
The day after Easter.
Yeah. Is that Dingus Day?
Oh, I couldn't.
I don't know. It's a holiday. We're taking that as a holiday. And I'll be off Tuesday. Don will be here Tuesday. I'll be back on Wednesday. I'm headed to San Antonio for the Final Four. Pretty pumped about that, Donald. Leaving tomorrow.
I know we're going to get into this whole thing.
We are.
And I see you with your nice little shirt on
Block
today.
M, yep.
But what happens if you guys don't win Saturday? Are you still going to the game on Monday?
Yes. We talked about that, my friends and I, my son and my friends and I, the four of us going, and we decided that it's a national championship game.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a national championship. You know, you got to buy tickets for both. If somebody handed you tickets to a national championship in football or, you know, basketball or a major sport, you'd go.
You'd go.
Yeah. Or if you bought tickets in this case, you'd go. I mean, you can't walk away from it. It is – even though your team might not be in it, and I am fully confident that they will be, you would go.
Okay.
And we're going.
All right.
Yeah, we're definitely going. And I hope it doesn't turn out that way. We'll talk about this game a little bit later on today, as soon as I get sorted out here. We do have a football show to do here today, and a pretty good one, as a matter of fact. A couple of guests coming up on the show today. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Reed Ferguson, Bill's long snapper. He made a lobbying trip to Washington, D.C. Did you read about this? His brother suffers from diabetes. Reed Ferguson, Bill's long snapper, last year. I don't think we had him on the show at all last year. Mm-hmm. Made a lobbying trip to Washington, D.C. to support congressional funding for research on diabetes. And we'll talk with Reed Ferguson about that, about his brother's plight, about coming into his second year as the Bills' long snapper. He's going to be joining us at 1 o'clock. Coming up at 2, Nate Davis, who covers pro football, NFL for USA Today, will join us. We'll talk to Nate about the draft and where he's at with the quarterback questions all going on around the NFL, some of the other free agency issues. He has done a ranking of free agent signings so far. Nate Davis will join us coming up at 2 o'clock today. What else? We're going to talk about Odell Beckham Jr. today. We're going to talk about Lamar Jackson, his pro day yesterday. He did not run, which I think both of us find kind of interesting, right?
It is. It is interesting. You know, I think even if he runs or ran a 40 at the combine or at the at his pro day, if he's saying he wants to be a quarterback, that's what the teams will put him at. You know, I mean, if you're so adamant about, yeah, I want to be a quarterback, we're not going to force you to be a wide receiver. We'll just draft you later. If that's really the case, if we don't feel like you can play quarterback, we'll just draft you later in the fifth round or something like that. But I think not running did him a disservice. I think
really?
I mean, I think he'll still end up getting drafted because he's a
quarterback.
Because he's a quarterback, but because he's talented and you can see it all on tape. And I don't know how much of a disservice. To be honest with you, I'm more worried about the fact that the teams reportedly are having trouble getting in contact with him.
Do you believe that?
I don't. I can't. If that's true, that right there is doing him a disservice.
Yeah, but I don't believe that. Here's what I'm thinking is going on there. I think that's been reported by some media members who got that word from agents. Look, most of the intel that comes out in the NFL goes through agents, right, to the media.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those agents, you know, they don't like the fact that a talented potentially first round quarterback like Lamar Jackson doesn't have an agent. And they want to put pressure on him. This is why you have an agent. No one can reach you. Well, you can. You know what? If we took a walk up, if they're there today, the Bills scouting department, and said, hey, I know nobody's here. Can you get Lamar Jackson on the phone? They'd say, sure. Don't you think they have a way to get in touch with him? I'm sure they do.
I mean, it would be foolish of him to not have contact to these teams, for these teams to not be able to get in contact. I don't care if they're calling his direct line. You answer the phone. Whatever area code, because I remember in this time, I would get calls from the craziest area codes. And it was like, wow, I don't know. I've never seen this one before. And this was before the call ID actually had where the call was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an area code. And so, you know, you answer the phone. Because at this point, at this time, you know it's either an agent or it's a team calling you. So you answer the phone. So, I mean, I hope that's not the case. I hope that the teams are able to get in touch with he or his mom or whoever else is in charge of handling stuff like that. And I hope it is just agents that are trying to report that. And the fact of the matter is, when you're a rookie coming into this thing, I mean, in my opinion, you really don't need an agent. Because you get drafted in a certain slot, that's where you get paid. I mean, it's really simple. When you are going for your second contract, then yeah, because now you're talking about really negotiating something. But when you're coming out of here and you're a guy like Lamar Jackson, wherever you get drafted, that is where you get paid. It's based on the salary cap, it's based on that sliding scale and what the guy got paid that went in that slot last year. It always goes up. It goes up whatever, however much, every year. And that's what you're going to get paid. So I don't even think he needs an agent. But you're right. Agents do not like when these young guys are coming out and they're like, or any player, period. They don't like when a guy like Lamar Jackson doesn't have one. They don't like when a guy like Richard Sherman doesn't have an agent.
Right. You're right.
And so because of that, you hear when Richard Sherman did his deal, what'd you hear? All of this negative stuff about it.
And the negative stuff, I believe, came from agents talking to reporters and reporters who need those agents to feed them intel, because mm-hmm. the clubs won't, need those agents, need those relationships with agents. We're happy to say, oh, Richard Sherman's contract stinks. Oh, Lamar Jackson, teams can't get in touch with him. Yeah, I'll write that for you. I'll do that. Is that the case? Huh, that's interesting. Knowing full well that down the road there's going to be an important signing or trade or some other transaction that they're going to need that agent's help with.
Exactly.
It's like they're in the club with the agents. And the agents don't like it. As you said, Donald, very articulately, when Lamar Jackson goes without an agent or Richard Sherman makes his contract without an agent. Anyway, we might have just shot that whole segment just now. Do we have more to say on that? We do have more to say on that later on.
We do have more.
1:30 if you want to hear more about that topic. We'll come up with something by then. Mm-hmm. On the show today, I gave you the guest rundown. We are a month away from the draft now, less than a month away, right? Yesterday was 4 weeks exactly from round one of the draft, 4 weeks exactly from today, round two of the draft. I spent a little time last night writing an article, which is going up on BuffaloBills.com, about this draft, why this draft is so important to the Bills. Obviously, one of the main reasons is the volume of draft picks, including two first-round picks. The Bills have two first-round picks in the draft this year, 4 weeks away from yesterday. Which current first-round pick on the roster is going to have the best season this upcoming year? What do you think? Who's the best first-rounder in 2018 still on the Bills roster? Do you know there's only four first-round picks on the Buffalo roster? They are Kelvin Benjamin, Tre'Davious White last year's, Jerry Hughes from the Colts, and Shaq Lawson a couple of years ago. Just two of those are Bills draft picks. But give us a call. Let us know what you think. As you look back a little bit and look ahead to the 2018 season, the Bills, which current first-round pick on their roster will have the best season in 2018? Lines are open. Love to hear your voice. 803-0550, the number, and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Which current first-round pick on the Buffalo roster will have the best season in 2018? A couple of things at play here. First of all, injury recovery, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when you look at a guy like Kelvin Benjamin, former first-round pick of the Carolina Panthers, mm-hmm. you would hope that his recovery from his injury is going to have a large say in how he plays this year. Secondly, guys who, you know, get better, make the transition from rookie to second year. I think Tre'Davious White, who was outstanding as a rookie, is in line to have another great year as a second-year player. I think Shaq Lawson is the guy who you might look at that and say, Shaq Lawson hasn't done anything. Well, he played six games his first year, a little bit more. What do you have, 10 games, I think, 10 or 12 games last year? You know, the Bills need a full season out of Shaq Lawson. They need much more production out of Shaq Lawson, but maybe he makes a big jump up. Asking you to project a little bit. The Bills have two first-round picks in this year's draft. Which current first-rounder on the roster, the current roster, will have the best season in 2018? On Twitter, 73% of you say Tre'Davious White, which is pretty amazing. 20% say Kelvin Benjamin. 4% say Shaq Lawson. Only 3% say Jerry Hughes. I'm looking for big things from Jerry Hughes this year. I think he's going to be much better than he was over the last couple of years. But give us a call. Make your case, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Donald, what do you think? Which of those four first-rounders will have the best season for the Bills in 2018?
All right, I'm going to go with, I think Kelvin Benjamin is going to have the best season this year. Main reason, because Kelvin Benjamin is in a contract season. And we know how guys play once they get in a contract season. If he's able to stay healthy, and I think he's going to come into training camp ready to go. The knock on him has always been he wasn't in shape. He was overweight, all of that stuff. I don't expect to see that from Kelvin Benjamin this year because he is in a contract season. And it really sounds selfish, and maybe it is, but guys play different when they're in a contract season.
Yeah.
They are trying to get paid. Kelvin Benjamin is looking at what Sammy Watkins just got paid this year out at the Kansas City Chiefs, and he is trying to get paid. And so he's going to – and especially Sammy Watkins, that I mean, he scored some touchdowns, but it's not like the guy had this all, you know, this all-pro type of season.
No.
So Kelvin Benjamin is going to come into this thing ready to go, and then he's going to have a blank slate, new offensive coordinator, a new quarterback throwing him the ball, and I think whoever the quarterback is going to realize this is a big physical wide receiver. He is not going to be the guy that is wide open often. You just throw the ball up to him and let him make the plays. There are plays last year where you've seen him make the plays in the snow game. You saw him make some plays in the Patriots game. The touchdown that got called back, that was a great play by Kelvin Benjamin. I think whoever is playing quarterback is going to give him a lot of opportunities, and he probably will end up being the number one wide receiver on this team this year. He's looking forward to it. So I think he's going to have the best season this year. I'm hoping, to be honest with you, that Shaq steps up and is ready to go. Because if you have Jerry Hughes, who I think Jerry Hughes is going to have a good year because you have a star Latulule, because you have a Kyle Williams coming back, those guys are going to eat up double teams. And it's going to free up those guys on the outside, into Jerry Hughes, Shaq, Murphy, whenever he's in there, there's going to be a rotation. But I'm hoping that when Shaq gets in there, he is ready to go. I think teams are going to leave Shaq one-on-one, and I'm hoping that he now steps up. I'm hoping that over these last couple of years, going through the injuries, not playing, has really helped to mature him. And I'm hoping that he comes out here this spring, has a great offseason. He gets into training camp looking like the first rounder that we all saw coming out of college.
Two first-round picks for the Bills this year, four first-rounders on the current roster. Which of those current first-rounders on the Buffalo roster will have the best season for the Bills? Give us a call, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Or you can do it on Twitter at John Murphy Show. A couple of tweets already on this. Scott Polichet agrees with you, Donald. Mm-hmm. It's Kelvin Benjamin. He's in a contract year. That's a good way to look at it. Yep, absolutely. Andrew North tweets in, Tre'Davious White is going to be a beast. He was kind of beast-like in his rookie year. And why not do him more? Why not do more of it, I should say. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Which of the current first-rounders on the Buffalo roster is going to have the bigger year, the best year this year? 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Interesting question. We did not include a couple first-rounders who have been signed in free agency. Star Lotulelei was a first-rounder, from Carolina. Vontae Davis was a first-rounder.
Yep.
You want to throw those in your conversation? Go ahead, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Alan, calling from Rochester. Hello, Alan.
Hi, guys. How are you today?
Good.
Anyway, I would like to make a couple points, if you don't mind, and then I'll hang up. But first of all, I'd like to say Jerry Hughes, because of the signings and because now he has some help, and also I'd like to comment about something yesterday I called and I didn't get on. But I'd like to say about the safety of the game. Owners are into making money. Players are disposable. So the safety wasn't a concern. CTE came along. Now it's about liability. All about liability.
Mm-hmm.
What are they liable for? And that is why you're seeing what's going on.
Well, I agree with you, Alan. It's liability, and I think it's the future of the game, right?
Yep.
It's you know, our kids playing football, you know, and if those numbers are down.
Women saying, I don't want my kids playing that game because they're going to get hurt. But people still play the game, and yes, it does take something away. Look at what has happened to hockey. Everybody used to love fights. I went in the 60s. I went in the 70s. Oh, my God, Battleship Bob Kelly. Just different players. Buffalo had a great player that was a winger that was a great fighter. Fighting has gone
Andrew
away.
Peters?
NHL. And look what's happened. The game has progressed. So.
Okay.
Hang up, and you guys have a great day. I love talking to you. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for calling. We love talking to you as well.
Yeah, I had to throw that one out here because Andrew probably in the car right now, so I had to mess with him real quick. But
like,
I think
what are you saying? The game hockey is better now that Andrew Peters is retired. Is that the?
No, he was saying that there's less fights in the game. Yes, and he was saying, you know, the Sabres used to have a good fighter.
Yeah.
So I said Andrew Peters. Yeah. I know that was his thing. But I think that you have a lot of people, a lot of parents who are saying, no, I don't want my kids playing at a certain age. If my kid wants to play, he can play once he gets into high school or something like that. And maybe that hurts the game because you don't have kids learning at that young, young age. But at the end of the day, I mean, people are still going to play the game. They are, because you have and especially in the inner cities. And that's just the truth of the matter. A lot of these guys that are in the NFL come from the inner cities, come from certain type of backgrounds, and they look at football, and you see a kid, and you're like, man, this kid is talented, and this kid can use this to get out of this situation, whatever situation that we're in right now. And so there will always be children that actually play the game. You might have a lot less, but you will still always have talented kids playing football.
803-0550, toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-552-550. What do you mean?
I don't know. He was doing something with
eyes. My eyes was itching.
Okay. You need clear eyes?
No, I'm good.
You can go out there and ask George.
I won't do that to George. If we're going to do that, we're going to do it on the air with George.
Yeah.
Hey, we got lines open. Give us a call. Which first-round pick currently on the Bills roster is going to have the best season coming up? You know, Donald, I told you I wrote this piece for the website. It should be coming up on the website. Maybe it's already there. About the importance of this draft. We know this is an important draft, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we take the calls every day. Everybody wants to talk about quarterbacks. But I came up with six reasons why this draft looks like a critical draft for the Buffalo Bills. Number one, because of the quarterback, right? Because of the fact that the Bills are seemingly in position to get a quarterback. They, other than publicly announcing and putting out a press release saying, we are in the market for a franchise quarterback, they've virtually done everything to signal that. Number two, the quarterbacks, the guys who are available, that makes it a very critical draft for the Bills. The number of Bills picks, and here's what I want to get to, because we talked about the two first-rounders. They've stockpiled this this year draft picks. They've stocked 9 picks this year, 6 among the top 100. I went back and looked at Bills history. When the Bills have a lot of picks early on, they get some great players. Now, that would you think, well, of course. But it's not always that good. 2001. Bills, 5 picks in the first 3 rounds, top 100. They wound up with people like Nate Clements, Aaron Schobel, Travis Henry, all 3 of them really good NFL players, some Pro Bowl appearances there. 1987, this is going back a ways now, I know that, but people will remember this. 5 picks in the top 3 rounds in 87. Shane Conlon, Nate Odoms. Here's the best I found. 1985, the Bills got Bruce Smith, Hall of Fame, Andre Reed, Hall of Fame, Derek Burrows, a really solid corner, Frank Reich, came in the top 86 picks of the draft. Of course, it's good to have a lot of picks, but my point is when you have a lot of picks, the chances are you're going to hit on a couple, more than a couple, and you're going to look good. You're going to have a good team when you have early picks like that. There was one year, I want to find it too, because it jumped out. It was an outlier. Oh, where's mine?
Where it was bad picks?
Yeah, they didn't match up with the good picks that the Bills had. I want to say it was 1994. And I thought, well, who was it in 94? It was John Butler, who was a great general manager for the Bills in 94. I don't have it in front of me, the 94 Bills draft. It didn't add up. They had a lot of picks and didn't add up. The point is, one of the reasons why I'm excited about this draft, it's not just because of the quarterback and the discussion about quarterbacks, and, you know, we got into it yesterday about people pushing their quarterback favorite and driving down the others as if it's a popularity contest. It is not. You know, it's hopefully a smart decision on who's going to be your quarterback. But one of the reasons I'm excited is not just because of the quarterbacks, it's because of the volume, the number of picks the Bills have. 9 picks right now, 6 in the first 3 rounds. That's a lot. You can do a lot of good things with that many draft picks, and I anticipate this group will. The 94 draft, the Bills had, let me count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 picks in the first 3 rounds, first 100 picks, and it was not really great. Jeff Burris, okay, played corner, Notre Damer. Bucky Brooks, who's more noted now for what he does.
Or on TV.
Yeah, on TV and online. Lonnie Johnson, tight end. Sam Rogers, linebacker. Marlo Perry, linebacker. Corey Luchet, tackle. 94 draft, not great for the Bills. 6 picks in the first 3 rounds. Virtually every other draft for the Bills, when they had, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 picks in the first 3 rounds, they cashed in with good players. And that's what gets, that's one of the big things that gets me excited about this year's Buffalo Bills draft 4 weeks away. They're in position to add a lot. Now, as we've talked about all week, they could consolidate some of those picks, package them up, and move up to get one guy. But still, the volume of picks is going to be the key to the draft for the Bills this year. The quarterbacks are big. The fact that they have a need for quarterback, the fact that they sent away their starting quarterback from the last 3 years and they have only two on the roster, that's all important. The quarterbacks available in the draft, that's key also. You know, the Daniel Jeremiah list, over the last 3 years, four of the top six quarterback prospects are in this year's draft. That's unusual. That's all important. But the volume of picks to me is the number one reason why I'm excited about this year's Bills draft, and maybe you are too. I don't know. How do you feel?
Well, I'm excited because of, yeah, I'm excited at the opportunity to get a quarterback. Now, the closer and closer we get to the draft, even though we're still 4 weeks away, the closer we get to the draft, it's just seeming more and more, and the people that I talk to, it just seems like, and we know it's hard to get up there, but it just seems like it's going to be really, really difficult to get up there without giving away everything. And so, you know, I would be excited if they got a quarterback. I'd be excited if they were able to just really use all of those picks and really build out a team and have a young roster. I believe in the things that they have done. This is Brandon Bean's first draft here as a GM. I think he's going to do a good job of bringing some talent on this roster. He and Coach McDermott together will do a good job of bringing some talent on this roster, bringing in their type of guys if they use all of those six picks. If they don't and they have to trade some away to get the quarterback that they want, then I will be confident in that quarterback and then whoever else they pick later in the draft.
It's definitely worth being excited about what the Bills have done to accumulate these draft picks and the chance to use them in 4 weeks.
I started to talk about Brandon Bean. This is his first year drafting here, but all of the moves that he's been able to make since he's been here, I'm excited, you know, that now really to see these moves, because he made all of these different trades and got all of this draft capital. So now you're going to actually see it come to fruition, because everybody was talking about where you're trying to, you're just adding picks. So regardless if you get a quarterback or not, I'm excited to see what they do with all these picks.
Me too. You know what they did last year? They played them.
Yes.
This is also in the post that's going up on BuffaloBills.com that I wrote this morning. They played them last year. Six picks last year. All of them made the 53-man roster right off the bat. 46 starts out of those six picks. Obviously, Tre'Davious White had the most of them, but they all, you know, except for Tanner Vallejo, they all started. Mm-hmm. First five all started games. So that would indicate that if they draft this year and keep those picks, those guys are going to play. Give us your thoughts on that. Two first-rounders on the Bills' draft list right now. They have two first-round draft picks. Which first-round pick currently on the roster is going to have the best season? 803-0550, the number. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. A couple of Bills' notes going into our show today. Philip Gaines, who a week ago had been reportedly linked to the Bills, has signed with the Bills. The cornerback, former third-round pick of the Kansas City Chiefs, 27 years old, a backup corner for the Chiefs the last three seasons. He is now a Buffalo Bill. Did get three starts for Kansas City last year, but played behind Marcus Peters and Steven Nelson. Philip Gaines is now with the Buffalo Bills. They have Vontae Davis and Tre'Davious White. You would think those are your three, top three corners. I would think Gaines probably projects as a nickel corner, wouldn't you say, Donald?
I would think so. And they even came out and said Vontae is going to be outside. You know,
yeah.
Tre'Davious is on the other side. And so, yeah, right now I would think that Gaines is going to be your nickel. We'll see, obviously they probably draft one or two.
Yep.
They draft corners every year. I think every team looks at it like you need to draft a corner because they're vital in on defense and they're vital in special teams. So they're going to draft one. We'll see if they bring back a Leonard Johnson, who is still out there, I believe. We'll see if they want to bring him back. We'll see. I think he was a big part of that defense last year. But, I mean, ultimately you need depth. So you need a couple more. So we'll see if they sign whoever in free agency and who they draft.
This Bills note came down late yesterday, too. Robert Klemko of SI.com reported the Bills are going to bring Oklahoma quarterback Baker Mayfield in for a pre-draft visit. You know, they get 30 visits, 30 players, 30 visits before the draft over the next month or so. According to Klemko, this will be the fourth time the Bills have met with Baker Mayfield. Talked to him at the Senior Bowl, talked to him at the Combine, put him through a private workout already, and now, according to Klemko, he is coming to Buffalo for a visit to Orchard Park for a visit with the Bills. He's also going to visit the Browns, who have the first pick, the Giants, who have the second, the Jets, who have the third, the Broncos, who have the fifth, the Dolphins, who have the 11th, and the Cardinals, who have the 15th. So Baker Mayfield, obviously one of the top, what, four quarterbacks, at least in this draft. Some people think consider him higher than that. He seems to have a lot of fans in our audience and our listenership who would love to have the Bills get Baker Mayfield. Maybe he doesn't last till 12. You know, they might have to move up to get Baker Mayfield. But he's coming in for a visit. And I'll be honest with you, Donald, if he did not come in for a visit, somebody would have to question the Bills. What are you thinking? You got to have a look at this guy, right?
I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think he's going to be the only one. I think they'll bring them all in.
Yeah, I do too.
And this info probably came from his agent. Let's just be honest. Probably came from his agent. Yeah, so that they can drum up the interest for Baker Mayfield so that, you know, whatever teams are up there, it seems like everybody's bringing in Baker Mayfield. And that's just media talk right there. I think Baker Mayfield is going to go somewhere in the top 10. I think he'll be the fourth one off the board unless he truly blows someone away in the in the rooms when they meet with him once he goes on all these visits. But I think ultimately teams like Rosen, they like Allen, and they like Sam Darnold. Those will be the first three to go. Baker Mayfield will go because you have teams still that like quarterbacks or need quarterbacks. That really need quarterbacks in the top 10.
I mean, there's the list, the teams that Baker Mayfield already has appointments with, right? Bills, Browns, Giants, Jets, Broncos, Dolphins, Cardinals.
Boom. So, I mean, all of those teams that we all know need quarterbacks, they're all meeting with them. So he's going to be gone, I think, by the time you get to 12. So if you want Baker Mayfield, you're probably going to have to trade up to get him too.
And all of those, except for the Cardinals, draft ahead of the Bills today, right now.
Right.
It's going to be an interesting month. We got a long way to go. Yes, we'll talk quarterbacks. We'll talk. I want to know about first-round picks. What do you think? The Bills with two first-rounders this year. Who's the best first-rounder currently on the Buffalo roster? Lines are open. We'll get to your calls when we return. 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Here until 3 today with Bills Talk, myself and Donald Jones. Thanks for tuning in. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're back. John Murphy, Donald Jones on this Friday afternoon here until 3 today. Welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll talk about Bills until 3 today. No show Monday. I'm off Tuesday. I'll be back Wednesday. What are you doing for Easter? You going home to Jersey?
I'm going home, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be about 60 degrees and sunny.
Oof. It's going to be 80 in
San Antonio. It's going to be 80 in San Antonio. So yeah. Is it going to be sunny or cloudy?
I think cloudy.
Oh. Well, it's going to be a cloudy weekend for you.
Yeah. It could be cloudy. It could be hazy. We're talking about the Bills. They got two first-round picks, and which first-round pick currently on the roster is going to have the best year? That's a topic we throw out there, but you can talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. Give us a call. Here we go. Let's start with Trent in Rochester. Good afternoon, Trent. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, guys, and thanks for having me. I'm the Trenton Johnson on Twitter that's always tweeting you guys. So
okay.
I want to say, number one, you have a great show.
Oh, Trent.
Thank you.
Nobody ever says that to us.
Having Donald sitting next to you, one of my favorite receivers. Donald, I keep telling you about the New England game that the Bills won. It was your third and long catch that started that drive.
Sure it was.
Did it all, man, for the Patriots. Now, back to your guys' question, though.
Thank you, Trent.
I do believe that the 12th pick, I mean, theoretically should have the biggest impact because it's going to be the first pick for the Bills. But one thing I will say, guys, I don't believe the Bills are going to reach for a quarterback. I just believe the quarterbacks are overvalued, and I believe that every time I look at A.J. McCarron, and I can't but help but compare him to everyone in that draft, I do not see the urgency because he actually has me more interested in what he can do than some of the best draft prospects. So it'll be interesting to see, but I do not believe they're going to move up. I believe they're going to let the draft come to them, and the Minka Fitzpatricks and the Tremont Edwards and Saquon Barkley, they're all going to push all these quarterbacks that we think everyone needs. down the draft. So I believe the third quarterback coming off the board will be a pick by the Bills, and I know you guys probably disagree with me, but that's my point.
And who would that be, Trent, the third quarterback coming off the board to the Bills?
I believe it's going to be Josh Allen, and the reason I believe that is because Sam Darnold, to me, and Baker Mayfield have stolen enough of the headlines, and they're moving up. But a guy made an interesting point on your show yesterday about the difference between draft analysts and GMs and how they look at players. So, you know, I just believe it's going to be Josh Allen to the Bills. I believe that Mayfield is going to the Jets, and I believe Darnold is going to the Browns. But it may reverse. If I were the Browns, I'm picking Saquon Barkley first, and I'll let the next three picks before me or two picks, they can fight over quarterback if they need to. I just don't believe the Giants are going to do it. So I think the Browns will be smart to pick their quarterback at four and take the best running back I've seen in a long time at number one.
Okay.
So that's what I think is going to happen. Josh Allen, I believe, will be a Bill.
Thank you, Trent. A couple of things there, and I know you want to talk about this too. Trent's contention, you know, that Brandon Bean will not draft a quarterback at 12. He may not. He may not have a chance to. And this is, as I sat down and thought about the draft again last night, I do every night, you do too, and wrote that piece that's going up on the website, I got thinking, all right,
nice
this
plug. That's
and you've talked to folks, you know, around who've said, it's going to be tough to move up, and it hit me overnight. It is going to be really tough to move up. They might not get to where they need to be to get the quarterback they want, but I don't think they're going to give that up easily, Donald.
Oh, no.
I think they're going to fight, try to get a quarterback, because almost everything they've done, going back to draft night last year when they made the trade with Kansas City, followed by, you know, the Ronald Darby trade, the Sammy Watkins trade, the Tyrod Taylor trade last month, a couple of weeks ago, the Cordy Glenn trade. Almost every move they've made has indicated we're in this for a quarterback. It'll be hard for Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott and the organization not to get up and get one of those quarterbacks. They may not be able to, and I think they'll be smart about it, but it's going to hurt if they can't. And it's going to hurt a lot of fans, I know that.
You know, I think they are going to try as hard as they can to get up there, but they might not be able to do it. It's going to be really hard. And if they're not able to do it, you know what I think we'll end up hearing out of some fans? And you'll have a lot of fans that were really happy that the team made it to the playoffs and ended the drought.
Should have won 9 games.
You should have tanked the season like everybody thought.
Oh, please.
That's what you're going to hear from fans.
Please.
If you can't get the quarterback, one of the top four quarterbacks, you should have tanked the season.
No.
You're going to get – I'm just saying, some fans will end up saying that. And you're going to be like, really?
Go ahead and watch hockey then, because that's where that works, or maybe it doesn't. You know what I mean?
Man.
You don't tank in the NFL. You can't. It's almost impossible. But sure, people will think that.
Oh yeah, people definitely think that. And yeah, we'll see if they're able to do it. And if they can't get up there, I don't want people to think that they're not trying. I think they're really trying to do that, and they've made certain moves. I mean, imagine how hard it would have been to get from 22 up to the top five.
Yeah.
So they made a trade to get up there to number 12. And now you're probably still trying to make some things happen. But right now it's kind of a dead period, you know, where I think teams are going to wait now before making trades back. Teams are going to wait really till draft week, till draft night, and see how high up the bidding will go for those spots. And to be honest with you, those teams up there, what's their incentive really to move out of that spot? Because you have teams up there that really need quarterbacks, you know. So, I mean, they have to just not like one of these guys, none of these guys. I mean, if you're sitting there, if you're the Broncos, you have to be like, I don't like any of these guys, and I don't think that's the truth. I think they at least like one guy.
Yeah. Well, so, the Bills, same thing, right?
Yeah.
Bills have to like at least one, maybe two of these guys.
Bills need to like all four of them.
They might not, though. That's what I'm saying. I think it's going to be really hard for Brandon Bean and McDermott and the entire organization to not take a quarterback with one of their first picks, one of their first-round picks, let's say. But it may work out that way, and no one's going to be happy about that, although they'll probably get some good players.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a call from Dave in Buffalo. Welcome to the show, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question for John, and then I have a comment. My question for John is, what would you give up to move up? What would you give up to move up?
Move up where and to get who?
To get a quarterback. What would you give up in draft choices to move up?
My
comment is,
okay,
how do you know that A.J. McCarron isn't isn't the quarterback you need. He's been studying defenses for 4 years behind Andy Dalton. He came from a good program. By giving up, let's say, what do you got to give up? Maybe two or three first rounds in the second round, like the Jets gave up or something. You might be giving up like three starters. Why would you give that up? You could build a team. You can design an offense around A.J. McCarron. And if he doesn't work out, you know what? There's always free agency next year or something.
For quarterbacks. Free agency rarely works getting quarterbacks.
All right. Why would you sell the farm when you don't even know what you might be getting? Don't you always hear that most of the quarterbacks drafted, only maybe 50% of them actually turn?
Sure. Well, you do it because you think you've got the guy. And, you know, there's no guarantee you're going to be right, but you think you have the guy.
Your show, I love your show. You guys seem like A.J. McCarron has no chance or something.
No, that's not true. I think McCarron's on the roster in September, and if I had to bet, I would think he might even be the starter in the first game
right.
in September.
Yeah,
so we haven't given up on him.
So why would you trade up and maybe give away all these draft picks for maybe three starters? You might have to give up, what, maybe one first round this year and a second round and maybe another first round next year, that you could be giving away three starters for a quarterback that you're going to draft that's just unknown.
Well, because quarterback's important, and I trust that these guys will identify.
I know it's important, but you're also giving up maybe three other positions.
Yeah, you're giving up a lot. No. Let me try to answer your first question, Dave. What would I give up? Maybe Donald wants to get in on this. I would give up to move up to get, say, Sam Darnold, who I believe is the best quarterback prospect this year. I would give up, you know, the 12 and 22. I would give up at least one, maybe both of my second-rounders, and maybe a third-rounder. I would like to avoid getting into next year's draft. That's what I'd move up to get Sam Darnold. To move up to get Baker Mayfield, I'd give up, I don't know, at least one, maybe both of my first and maybe a second. So there's a difference. You're asking me for my opinion. I'm not telling you what the Bills are going to do or what I think the Bills are thinking about doing. That's my opinion. You asked for it. Donald, what do you think? What would you give up to get Sam Darnold?
Well, I think you
or to get your who's your favorite quarterback?
My in this favorite
draft?
Quarterback
in this draft. Who would you like for the Bills?
Ooh, I've been on the Baker Mayfield
okay.
bandwagon.
What would you give up to move up to get? If you might, do you have to move up from 12 to get Baker Mayfield?
I think so.
Probably.
Yeah.
So what would you do to move up?
I think you need to get to 5 or 6 to get Baker Mayfield.
What would you give up?
And what would I give up? I think I would if you only had to give up get up to 5 or 6 to get Baker Mayfield, then you're giving up 22, you're giving up one of your seconds, one of your thirds. And I think that would be that. Or you might have
you're
to
giving
even
up 12
add,
and 22.
Yeah, well, so you're going to flip-flop.
Right.
You know, 12 with whatever pick. You're going to give up 22, give up a second, a third, and maybe even a third for next year or something like that. But not next year's one. Not to get up to number 6 for Baker Mayfield. I'd give up a third for next year.
Okay, we are right back into the quarterback discussion.
Look at the phone lines.
Hey, let me get you off that for a second. I'm going to go back to our discussion last week with Jordan Renan, ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the Giants. Again, this is me patting myself on the back, Donald, when I said to him, hey, Jordan, what's the chance that with Beckham's issues that somehow it plays into the draft? I only say this because it took a week for Odell Beckham Jr. to be mentioned prominently in trade talks,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a real possibility now. Adam Schefter says the Giants have asked for at least 2 first-round picks in return for Odell Beckham. Beckham, according to Gary Myers, New York Daily News, Beckham has told multiple Rams players that he wants in on a trade to L.A. Todd Gurley, Rams running back, says it would be awesome to add Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but a week after this, I broached this topic, kind of like a crazy throw-in question.
Right.
A week after that, Odell Beckham Jr. appears to be headed to could be traded to the Rams. And apparently, according to Gary Myers of the New York Daily News, is telling Rams players, friends of his, yeah, I'll go to L.A. I'd love to play for you guys.
Yeah, I think – I don't know if Odell Beckham – what's going on in his mind, to be honest with you. I really don't. He wants to get paid, and I think that's the only thing on his mind. And I don't know if now – his feelings are hurt that they've talked about, yeah, we'll trade him away if you give us 2 first-rounders. And so now he's calling friends. I don't know where this stuff is coming from. For me, I'm going to look this up. How much the Rams have?
Cap?
In terms of their cap. How much do they have? Because, man, I mean, they brought in a lot of guys that are getting paid some money. at the receiver position, you have Robert Woods, who's getting paid. You have Cooper Kupp on your rookie deal. I guess Robert Woods is the only one out there that's really getting paid some money, but
you know, they're paying the quarterback on his rookie deal.
On his rookie deal, yeah. So that does make a big difference. But you got to pay Aaron Donald here coming up. You know, and that's a big – I mean, Aaron Donald's going to make probably somewhere close to quarterback money. I mean, Odell Beckham and Aaron Donald are going to end up making the same type of money. And you know if you trade for Odell Beckham, you're going to give up whatever it is, 2 first-round picks. That's what the Giants are saying. Knowing that, Odell has already said, I'm not going to touch the field unless I get paid long term. And so is that what you really want to deal with? And you put that on top of all of the other stuff off the field. And now you're going to put him out in Los Angeles where, I mean, it's just party town. No, I just don't think it. I don't think that's the best thing for Odell Beckham right now in his career.
Our buddy Mike Giannitti, SpotTrack.com, estimated cap space for the Los Angeles Rams right now, $16.6 million, top 51 players. There's some room there. There's some space.
There's some space. Yeah, they would have to be creative. But he wants something like $20 million a year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they would have to be creative in the bonus money and all of that stuff to be able to get to $20 million a year to pay Odell Beckham long term. But I don't know if they want to bring him in, give away some picks that the Giants are talking about, then have to pay him long term. You already have Robert Woods, who played very, very well for you last year. I know Odell Beckham is a difference maker, definitely a difference maker, but Robert Woods is a very good receiver. Cooper Kupp was a very good receiver for you. Odell Beckham will come in, and you got a lot of different personalities now in that locker room. Odell Beckham could come in and truly just mess things up with his personality itself.
It is amazing, though. In a week, Beckham telling Rams, I want to be in on the trade to L.A. Todd Gurley says, come on, we'd love to have you. And the Giants, even the Giants saying, here was a quote from John Mara Sunday, we're certainly not shopping Beckham, but when you're coming off a season where you played as poorly as we played, I wouldn't say anyone's untouchable. Nobody's ruling it out. In fact, some people are ruling it in. Could happen in the next month, the Beckham trade could happen by draft day, really.
If a team offers 2 picks like that, they're going to gladly trade them away.
Yeah.
I mean, you keep hearing different things. What you don't hear is we're not going to trade him away. He's going to be here next year. You don't hear that at all.
Right.
All you hear is, yeah, we're open. We're listening. So I think if a team does offer that, they will gladly go ahead and move on from Odell Beckham and the headache that is Odell Beckham.
Maybe it's not the Rams. In fact, our guest coming up at 2 o'clock today, Nate Davis, who covers the NFL for USA Today, has a list of the best landing spots for Odell Beckham if he is, in fact, traded. We'll talk more about that coming up at 2. We'll talk more with you when we return. We're going to take a short break here. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. Donald and I coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones on this Friday afternoon. Coming up, coming from One Bills Drive, this building is kind of empty for a good Friday, and it'll be empty again Monday. No show for us on Monday. Final Four weekend, Donald.
Everybody off Monday, too?
Yeah. Yeah. You work here?
They got 2 days off. Yeah, I kind of keep to myself, man.
I can tell, yeah.
Yeah,
Monday's a day off for our show as well. Tuesday, Donald's back with Steve Tasker. Wednesday, I'll be back. So we've been putting it off, but it's time to talk a little bit about the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And like most casual fans, you are enamored of the Loyola Chicago story and Sister Jean, right? I mean, you are really a cross-section of America, not paying much attention at all to the great sport of college basketball throughout the course of the year. And you tap in at the end of March, and you go, oh, that's an interesting story. Look at a 90-year-old nun who follows her team.
No.
No?
No.
You had something on Twitter about the news conference for Sister Jean.
Oh, that was great.
What was it?
It's a picture. Brian Casella actually tweeted this out. And there's a picture, and her and Marquez Towns had media availability, so press conferences, at the same time.
Yeah.
And he had 3 people asking him questions.
Yeah.
Yes, an actual player, one of their better players, one of their star players. He had 3 people, and she had a room full, like she was at the White House. It was great. I mean, the fact that she has so many people asking her questions, I mean, that is amazing. What is she even talking about?
I don't know. You know, I feel bad for her sometimes, and it's a great story. and she's great. I'm not anti Loyola Chicago, but I feel bad for her sometimes. And and I've been watching them since the tournament began. I'm not like you, just tuned into the end here. She's been doing these pre and post game interviews, and they really don't have much to ask her other than, how did you like that game? You know, basically, she's wonderful. You know, she's been like a team chaplain and with that team forever. That's great. But she has nothing to say. Right. God bless her. I hope, you know, she enjoys herself this weekend for a little bit up until about 8 o'clock tomorrow night.
They asked her today. I did see a quote. They asked her today if she thinks Jesus watches basketball.
and
she said, I believe so. And he probably watches college basketball over the NBA.
No question.
Yeah. So
he probably roots for Loyola Chicago and all the Catholic schools.
Right. These are the types of questions that she's getting now.
Good story.
And the whole
story
is on her. I mean, I guess she's taking the pressure off the players, I guess.
Maybe. I wonder if she's taking the spotlight away from some of those players. I wonder if they feel that way.
You can look at it that way, too. Yeah. You know, like, hold on. We're actually out here playing.
We're playing.
You know?
It's a great story. And I know that when I go to the game tomorrow night in San Antonio, when I sit down at 6:09 Eastern time to watch Loyola Chicago and Michigan, 75% of the Alamo Dome crowd, which is going to be some, what's 75% of 70,000, whatever that is, 50-some thousand, they're going to be rooting for Loyola Chicago. I get that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm rooting for Michigan. I think Michigan's winning tomorrow night, Donald, because they're a pretty good team. You know, they're giving up their average points against in the tournament so far this year, four games, 59 points scored against.
Mm-hmm.
They are a great defensive team this year. Every once in a while they can get hot and start dropping threes. They might not even need to do that tomorrow against Loyola. I think they win tomorrow and advance to Monday night. What about that?
Are we doing?
We're doing predictions.
Oh, we're doing predictions. Already know where I am with this game. You already know where I am. Loyola Chicago, the Cinderella story, and all of the fans that will be in the stadium rooting for them. I'm going with them, and they're going to go ahead and face. Oh, we can get into the next game.
Well, go ahead. You got the next game. You got Villanova.
Go ahead, and I think Villanova is just too good for Kansas. And to be honest with you, I don't. Well, Kansas is one of those teams that they always get to, like, the Elite Eight, Final Four, but they never win the entire thing, you know? I mean, every now and then they will. I know they have a big history, very storied history at that school, but just as of late, they never win the big thing. And Villanova, I just think, is too good. And I like the way they play basketball. I like their style of play, up-tempo, run. They play with a lot of guards. They always have, and they recruit a lot of guards from Jersey. And that whole area, that whole tri-state area, Pennsylvania as well. And so I think it's going to be Villanova, Loyola Chicago, and the championship game.
And who's winning Monday?
Villanova.
Okay. I got Villanova winning tomorrow. I got Michigan knocking off Villanova on Monday night when I'm sitting there in the stands. Again, that's the game where I think Michigan can start dropping the threes. And they can shoot threes like nobody else can. And it's going to be a great weekend. I'm looking forward to going, rooting for my buddy's team, John Beilein's team at Michigan. I was thinking today, watching these games, you know, my son and I were talking. My son Mark's going.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about, do we belong there? You know, neither one of us Michigan alums or, you know, the only tie we have with that school is Beilein, John Beilein, the local guy. But I was thinking, they've played 38 times this year. I bet I've watched in its entirety, I bet I've watched 33, 35 games.
You have. You've been watching since the beginning.
Since
I remember when basketball, it feels like basketball season just started.
I know.
The NCAA
that's because
season.
It's still winter here in Orchard Park.
True. And I remember the first games. You're like, Michigan's playing tonight.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and the football season was just ending. And
I bet I missed three or four games. I was in Florida for a week, and when we were at the combine, I couldn't get out of my hotel room because I was so sick, other than work.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed two games that week in the Big Ten tournament. But I'm into this team. I love this team. They're a fun team to watch. John is a great coach. I think most Western New Yorkers appreciate that. You would too if you would open your mind a little bit. Great coach, does it the right way. I think it'll be great for college. One more thing. It'll be great for college basketball if Michigan wins and if Beilein wins, because he personifies what college basketball wants to be, what college sports wants to be, about student-athletes who excel. You know this. I told you this last year. He was voted in a poll from CBS by 100 fellow NCAA Division I Power Conference coaches as the cleanest coach in college basketball. Doesn't break rules. It would be great for college sports if Michigan wins this weekend.
I respect the way he's gotten here and the kids that he's recruited. The D3 player to transfer in, who's a grad student, right?
Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, kids from out of the country, not the McDonald's All-Americans that everybody else is trying to get. All of the big-time schools trying to get the number one players, the McDonald's All-Americans, the Zion Williamsons of the world. And he is not recruiting those guys, and he's still able to actually put together good teams. He's coaching those teams up, and they find themselves running deep into the tournament the last few years, and now in the Final Four again for, what, the second time in, what, 5 years?
Yep.
I'm happy for him that he's able to do it the way he's doing it, to do it the clean way. A question for you, what'd you think about the kid from that was committed to Syracuse, decommitted, and now is going to play in the G League? Did you see that?
I did. I think it's a trend that you're going to see more of, right? Don't
yeah,
you think?
I do. I do. I think these one-and-done kids, and to be honest with you, I'd rather them do that, you know? And that's going to sound bad because you're like, man, what do you mean you'd rather a kid not go to school? These kids that are these McDonald's All-Americans have no – their mindset is not on school at all. Their mindset is, I'm going here to play basketball 1 year, and I'm leaving. Regardless, I'm out. And so they go to school in the beginning to be eligible for basketball season, and then they're done. Half of them don't even go to class anymore. They're done. And they go through the season, and then they declare for the draft. And so if that's your mindset, you might as well just go ahead to the G League and play there, develop for 1 year, and try to get into the NBA.
The sport is changing. In fact, I was reading last night about there's a big meeting among coaches and NCAA executives coming up about a week or 10 days after the Final Four. They're going to sort through as many of these issues, one and done. Some people have called for 2 years or don't play at all. They've got to come up with a plan, and I think there's an effort underway to make that happen about a week or so after the Final Four. Hey, permit me, just on a personal note, this is not Final Four related at all, but Western New York, one of Western New York's greatest sports fans and really one of its great all-time athletes, passed away this week. Dr. Ed Gusevich, Doc Gusevich, passed away a couple of days ago. One of the best players in UB football history, really, played for the UB Bulls. He was the team doctor for the UB Bulls for several years, member of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, member of the UB Athletics Sports Hall of Fame. I got to know him on the Bills broadcast. He was a great friend of the late Van Miller and was our spotter on the Bills broadcast for several years. Huge Bills fan for several years. Did a great job in the broadcast booth. Tremendous philanthropist in Western New York. He and his family have done a tremendous amount in many leadership roles. President of the UB Medical Alumni Association, founder and the first medical director of the University Sports Medicine Institute. Ed Gusevich passed away Wednesday, age 89, and we send along our condolences to his wife and their 5 children and 11 grandchildren. A great guy, really one of the funniest people I've ever met all time, and a good guy to have in our broadcast booth. And we send along our best wishes to the Gusevich family on the passing of Dr. Ed Gusevich. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Reed Ferguson, Bill's long snapper, going to join us when we return. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive, the Buffalo Bills with a signing late yesterday. They signed cornerback Philip Gaines to the roster. Gaines had been talked about with the Bills for more than a week. Former third-round draft pick of the Kansas City Chiefs, a backup at Kansas City, did start 3 games for the Chiefs last season. Gaines provides depth for the Bills behind projected starters Vontae Davis and Tre'Davious White. Philip Gaines, new cornerback for the Buffalo Bills. Baker Mayfield, quarterback Oklahoma, expected to be one of the first rounders in this year's draft, is going to make a visit to Buffalo among his trips around the NFL prior to the draft. Robert Klemko of SI.com says the Bills are bringing in Mayfield for a pre-draft visit. The fourth time he's met with Bills officials, he talked with them at the Senior Bowl at the Scouting Combine, and the Bills put him through a private workout already. Mayfield will also visit the Browns, the Giants, the Jets, the Broncos, the Dolphins, and the Cardinals. Lamar Jackson had his pro day yesterday at University of Louisville. He wanted to prove to NFL decision makers that he can throw from under center. He did that, but he did not run the 40-yard dash. The former Heisman Trophy made 59 throws taking snaps from under center, declined to run the 40, just as he did at the Combine in Indianapolis earlier this month. He told NFL Network he decided not to run, as his game tape should tell teams all they need to know about his mobility. Brandon Whedon still in the NFL. The Houston Texans say they've signed the free agent quarterback who last played for the franchise 3 years ago in 2015. That's the last time he appeared in an NFL game. Buffalo Sabres last night jumped out to an early lead but gave it up. The Detroit Red Wings came from behind to beat the Sabres 6-3, spoiling Casey Mittelstadt's NHL debut. Mittelstadt recorded the first assist of his career and a third-period goal from Evan Rodriguez. The Sabres hit the road for a 2-game road trip that begins in Nashville tomorrow night. Then they play at Toronto before returning home against Ottawa for Fan Appreciation Night next week, April 4th. Robin Leonard left the game after the second period last night, replaced by Chad Johnson. day-to-day with a lower body injury. The Final Four starts tomorrow in San Antonio with Michigan and Loyola of Chicago in the first game, followed by Villanova in the nightcap going up against Kansas. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Well, this got my attention earlier this week. Bills long snapper Reed. That's the second time I've said long snacker. Bills long snapper Reed Ferguson made a trip to Washington, to Capitol Hill, to push for diabetes funding. He was lobbying in Congress, and Reed Ferguson joins us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Reed, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones here back in Buffalo. Thanks for coming on with us. Tell us about your trip to Washington lobbying. What was that all about?
Well, first of all, thanks, guys, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure.
So basically there's a group that works. It's called Team Tackle, a group of some football players, NFL, and my brother joined us this year. He's still playing in college, but Team Tackle joins up with the American Diabetes Association, and a big group. We all get together and go to the Hill. We went on a Thursday morning, and the ADA set up some different meetings. They kind of had a bunch of groups going around to a lot of the state senators' offices and having meetings with either the senators themselves or their personal staffers. And basically we were just meeting with them for about 15 to 20 minutes each and trying to more or less persuade them, to get some more funding for diabetes research and the National Diabetes Prevention Program.
Reed, what was that like when you're sitting in the rooms talking to them? I know for me, I go down to Capitol Hill every year on kidney advocacy stuff, and I know when I'm sitting down there talking to them, some of them, sometimes they act like they're interested. Other ones act like they're staring. I mean, they look like they're staring right through you. So what was it like for you, Reed, being down there in the room talking to those senators?
Right. That was my first time kind of being in that situation, in front of congressmen like that. But it's very surreal. I think, even when we met with the congressmen and when we met with the staffers, especially the ones from Louisiana, they were already a part of one of the main diabetes research fund boards there that's functioning in Capitol Hill that they kind of lobby for every year. So it was there was a lot of good feedback from them, a lot of good give and take during the discussion. So I think that really helped out.
Are there certain bills that you're trying to get passed through? Is there like one bill that's on the table that has been on the table for a while that hasn't been passed that you're trying to get passed through?
I don't think there's any specific bills. It's more trying to get more funding for the NIDDK. It's the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive Kidney Diseases. Mm-hmm. Trying to get more funding for that. Also, more funding for the National Diabetes Prevention Program. I think about $25 million is what the ADA is asking for that. But that's all, most of the funding that we're asking for is for fiscal year, is to be put in the fiscal year 19, that budget.
Is this something that you will see yourself doing for the rest of your career every year in the off season, and then even when you're done playing?
I definitely think so. Yeah, there was a few guys, and I think there was about 10 or 11 guys that play now and former players. We were split off a lot, so I didn't catch everybody's name. But some of the guys that were former players had they've been making this trip every year since they stopped playing. So I definitely think that it's something that I'll keep doing as long as I'm active player and as well as when I stop playing, because it's something that's important to me. It's something that's important to my brother and my family as a whole.
How many people on what you call Team Tackle? How many lobbyists did you have there in Washington?
Well, the Team Tackle. So for Team Tackle, I think that's been around for three. I think this is the third year that they've done Team Tackle, and I believe the number that the lady that kind of runs the program, she told me they've had about 80 players total in the last 3 years kind of help out and go through with Team Tackle.
Reed, Donald was asking you about the level of engagement from some of these legislators. Do you find that the fact that, your football players, in your case NFL players, that maybe that gets their attention a little bit?
I think so. You know, I think kind of them realizing, you know, us, you know, presenting ourselves, but them realizing that kind of this pedestal or this stage, I guess, that we have as football players, we're able to reach a lot of people, you know, with these different activities that we, you know, these different research programs and stuff that a lot of guys like to take part in the off season. So I think it brings, I think being able to communicate with, you know, with people that have a high, you know, a high outreach, like a lot of NFL players do, I think that's important for Congress people to, you know, to stay in good communication, because we can, you know, we're able to reach a lot of people and get the word out about a lot of things.
We're on the line with Bills long snapper Reed Ferguson, who just made a trip to Washington with his group to talk about diabetes prevention and research. And your brother Blake, you talked about him. He also was a LSU long snapper, right? Tell us about his involvement with diabetes, Reed. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Blake, he currently plays at LSU now. We got to spend 1 year there my senior year. He redshirted as a freshman. But he's been playing for 2 years now. He's got 2 years left. He's loving it down there. But he's had diabetes, type 1 diabetes, for 7 years now. And it's been something that has certainly been somewhat of a challenge on him, you know, not only him, but, you know, the family also. But, you know, he's been a real trooper. He's one of the main NCAA spokespersons for diabetes and diabetes research. So that's what kind of prompted the ADA to bring him along on team tackle this year. But, you know, he's very outspoken about, you know, trying to get more funding and trying to make insulin more affordable and all of kind of the, you know, all the main topics that the ADA is fighting for. And you know, he's a real trooper, I'll say that.
Reed, tell us about your off season so far. You're a couple of weeks away, I would think, from coming back up here to Orchard Park to get ready for the season. But what have you done during your off season since January 7th?
Yeah, I've done tried to relax a little bit. I guess right after the season ended, took a few weeks off. But then, you know, I like to travel, so I did a little bit of traveling. Went down to Baton Rouge, saw my brother, visited with him for a little bit. I visited Houston for the first time. That was right down the road from Baton Rouge, and you know, just kind of trying to make the most of it, trying to you know, keep working out and staying in shape, but also trying to enjoy my time off.
Reed, when in your off seasons, and I know a lot of players, they train together. If you're a wide receiver, you have your workout, but then you might even go train with other wide receivers or train with a wide receiver guru, whatever the case may be, to improve in your, you know, in your expertise, your area, your position. Do you train with like a long snap guru or something like that?
I had, you know, as I was going through middle school and high school and even college for a few times, there's a guy, his name's Chris Rubio, that I've used. You know, very popular, runs a lot of camps nationwide. But he lives in Idaho. He travels a lot for his camp, so not, you know, it's kind of hard to get out there and see him for me. But you know, I kind of just you know, it makes it real easy that my parents kind of live close to me now, so you know, it's real easy for me to just go down the road to the gym and snap with my dad you know, a few times a week. So you know, it makes it a little easier that I don't have to get together with a lot of people to get a workout in. It makes it pretty simple.
You grew up there, right, in Buford, Atlanta area? Is that where that is, Reed?
Yes, yeah. I grew up a little north of Atlanta in Alpharetta, and we moved to Buford, and then now my parents and I, we all live on the west side of Atlanta in Smyrna.
When did it occur to you might be able to make a living as a long snapper?
That's a good question. I would say, you know, I started doing it in eighth grade. Our center at the time, center and long snapper, kind of went down with injury. I wasn't playing much at defensive end. So, you know, I figured me and my dad, he kind of prompted me and said, you know, this, you know, we can start practicing long snapping and see if it's a way you can get on the field. So, I was willing to do just about anything to get out there and get some playing time. So, started snapping, you know, practicing almost every day, almost every morning before I'd go to school. And then once I got a, you know, figured that I was doing pretty well at it, freshman, sophomore year of high school, you know, I figured it was something that I really wanted to pursue and try to go to college. Ended up getting a scholarship to LSU. And then, you know, at that point, I figured I LSU was going to give me all the tools that I needed to take it even, you know, the next step and try to make it to the pros. And, you know, I like to think that I took, you know, full advantage of my opportunities so far.
You know, Reed, it's interesting because people talk about kickers and punters as, you know, really sometimes underappreciated. You know, you really don't think about them until you need them at the end of the game. But I think a long snapper is really that position in football because you don't think about the long snapper until it's a bad snap.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it kind of comes with the position, you know, as you know, you kind of fall in love with being anonymous. And that's kind of just something that I've learned. And I think all, you know, good snappers have inside of them is when you're doing your job right, nobody knows who you are, and that's kind of how we want it to be. So, you know, we'll let the guys that score the touchdowns take the fame.
Reed Ferguson on the line with us, Bill's long snapper. Hey, Reed, how important to your success was it to be here for that 1 year on the practice squad, 2016? You don't see that very often, I would guess, you know, a long snapper on the practice squad, but the Bills kept you around 1 year before they asked you to play. How much did that contribute to your success last year, do you think?
Oh, I think it was – I think it definitely helped me a lot. You know, being able to just be up there and be, you know, on the team, you know, around the guys and in the environment of being on a pro team, you know, basically doing everything but, you know, traveling and playing in the games. But, you know, being able to get out there and practice every day, you know, because the roster is so small, you don't have an option but to get out there and play with the guys that you know, that I ended up playing with this year. So, yeah, I think it helped me, you know, greatly to be able to get that experience for, I guess it was a little over half of the second half of the season. But, yeah, no, it's something that I really enjoyed and something that I'm very, very appreciative of.
And got your chance to play and to snap last year, all 16, 17 games, really. What was it like to, you know, I consider Garrison Sanborn one of the great long snappers in recent NFL history. You had to succeed him. That's kind of big shoes, right? Tough act to follow in some ways.
Yeah, and Garrison was a guy that taught me a lot, you know, really about being a pro, being a snapper in the league. And, you know, I really appreciate everything that he kind of handed down to me, and certainly big shoes to fill. You know, he was here for a long time. I think he was here in Buffalo for eight years. So,
yeah.
Big shoes to fill. I know he was very, very well liked around the facility and around the community. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm very thankful for everything that he handed down to me, knowledge wise and you know, football wise, I guess.
Reed, obviously, you know, your number one job is to snap the ball and make sure it gets back there to the kicker. But especially on the punt team, you got to run down and make some tackles too. So how have you – I mean, you talked about playing defensive end. This is another way where you can make some tackles. How have you embraced that part of running down the field, making tackles?
Well, yeah, it's something that I've kind of enjoyed. At LSU, I was – basically more of a contained player, so I wasn't able to make, you know, get my nose on the ball too much. But, you know, now, you know, certainly snapping the ball and you know, making sure the protection is correct is first and foremost at this level. But, you know, once the punt's off and once we can get away and get down the field, it's certainly fun to go down there and headhunt a little bit.
Donald kind of asked you this a minute ago about your offseason, but what goals have you set for yourself in your second season as the Bills' long snapper? What would you like to do?
I think the main thing is just to not kind of have the, I guess, the cliche sophomore slump. You know, I'd like to continue to improve in all aspects of my game. I think, you know, my coverage skills can, you know, you can always improve in that aspect. And then, I think, you know, building more and more camaraderie with Colton and Steven, I think that relationship between the three of us is extremely important. I think they would probably tell you the same. Just continue to improve my relationship with them. We're all very good friends already, but, when the time comes on fourth down, you know, we all got to be on the same page. So, I think that's extremely important.
Reed, congratulations to you on your trip to Washington to push for funding for diabetes research. And thank you very much for spending some time with us on the phone today. We'll see you up here in a couple of weeks. You're coming up for the off-season workouts, I would think, huh?
Absolutely. Be up there in about 2.5 weeks. Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll see you then. Thank you for joining us on the phone today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Reed Ferguson, Bill's long snapper, who spent some time in Washington recently with what do you call it, the tackle team, right? Team tackle. Trying to push for congressional research into diabetes prevention and research on the disease. His younger brother, Blake, who is the long snapper at LSU, is afflicted with diabetes, and that's good work by Reed to do that, to spend some time doing that. Mm-hmm. Sounds like he didn't just start either. He's been doing it for a while, he said.
Yeah, that's good. It's good. I mean, you know, everybody's dealing with stuff. I always talk about players are people as well, and they deal with stuff. They have family members that deal with stuff that really affects them, and so, you know, he talked about his brother being type 1 diabetic, and so, you know, they're trying to get more funding for research, and there are so many players across the league, almost all of them, that actually do things like this. It's not spoken about all the time because they're not, you know, in front of the cameras talking about it, but guys are dealing with stuff, and they're trying to either raise funds for different diseases or whatever, or for any city. I mean, there are so many different things that these guys are trying to raise money for, and Reed is doing a good job being down there on Capitol Hill. That trip down there to Capitol Hill is interesting. I go down there every year, and I'm telling you, when you sit in there with these legislators, sometimes you don't get to speak to them. You speak to a staffer that's like 21 years old, fresh out of college, and they're like, yeah, you know, I'll make sure that, you know, he gets the message and all of that. He or she gets the message, and you're like, yeah, okay, on to the next one. But when you do get a chance to talk to one of them, and you find out that they are actually already one of the co-sponsors of a bill or something like that, it really gets you excited.
Yeah.
And so you get to talk to them, and you only really get about 15 minutes with them as they're busy people. But it's an interesting time.
Well, congratulations to Reed for doing that and doing what he has done so far in the area of diabetes research. I want to switch gears here. First of all, our Twitter poll today, what we're talking about today, Bills with 2 first-round draft picks this year in the draft less than a month away. And we want to know from you, what do you think about the Bills' current roster and the first-round draft picks on the Buffalo roster? Who among that group is the best and maybe has the most to offer in the upcoming season? First-round draft picks. Let me check the results on our Twitter poll right now because we have had pretty good response on this. Which current first-round pick on the Bills roster have the best season? 72% of you say the easy choice, Tre'Davious White. 20% say Kelvin Benjamin. 4% say Jerry Hughes. 4% say Shaq Lawson. I think folks are underselling Jerry Hughes a little bit here, Donald. I expect him to have a pretty good year.
Yeah, I think Jerry's going to have a good year because you got Kyle and you got Star Lotulelei. And you got Trent Murphy. And you have Shaq coming back, hopefully a healthy Shaq, ready to prove that, you know, he was worthy of the first-round pick that they actually took to get him, right? So I think that Shaq is going to come back ready. The rest of the guys across the defensive line, and that could possibly free Jerry Hughes up. Jerry hasn't had the best of seasons over the last couple of seasons, and I'm sure he wants to prove that, yeah, he makes a certain amount of money, and that's what everybody talks about, but he's worthy of that money, and he wants to have a better season. And so I think he's going to see a lot of one-on-one action, and I expect him to take advantage of it.
Let's take your phone calls and talk about that or any other issues on your agenda. George in Williamsville. George, go ahead. You're on the air.
Gentlemen, great show. I listen to you guys all the time.
Thank you, George.
My comment is, actually, the gentleman we drafted from Cincinnati, are we going to give him a chance?
McCarron.
I'm a patient man because I am a Buffalo Bills fan. And I don't think we should use up a lot of picks to go after someone right away. I don't know what our draft choices are for next year, but I could possibly wait a year because of all of our draft picks now and see how this this quarterback works out for us because he hasn't played a lot. So he doesn't have a lot of wear and tear on him.
Right.
And from what I've seen, you know, he's no slouch.
Right.
Or we wouldn't have taken him. What is your opinion about next year and using?
Well, here's the problem, and I want to get your opinion on this, George. You can wait. You can certainly wait and give McCarron a chance or Nathan Peterman a chance. That wouldn't be a bad move, I guess. But when are the Bills going to be in position with this many draft picks to move up and get a quarterback? Or when are there going to be this many potential candidates for a franchise quarterback available in the draft? I don't know if you can wait, you know, and unless you finish, you know, 3-13, 2-14, you never get a chance at a franchise quarterback in a draft. This is a little bit of a different year. What about that, George? What about the opportunity that has presented itself to the Bills with draft capital and with a strong draft class?
Well, if that's the case and that's the outcome, I just can't foresee using a lot of our potential draft picks for one guy, because we can build the team around a decent quarterback.
Yeah, but they don't want to be decent. They want to be good. They want to be great. I think that's the message that I get. It's I get your point, George. I mean, let's look at it from another team standpoint for a second. Now, Kansas City Chiefs going to go with Pat Mahomes this year. Mm-hmm. They've invested two first-round draft picks in Pat Mahomes, right?
Yeah, they have. And so now you see him actually – you see Alex Smith get traded out, and you see Pat Mahomes step in.
They're regarded as a good team, a
playoff team.
Playoff team every year.
Mm-hmm.
Smart coach, people running the Chiefs. I mean, they're
– yeah.
That's what teams do, and they find the quarterback they like. They like Mahomes that much last year.
Everybody wants to have that guy, the quarterback. And the quarterback is important. It really is. He is, because he's the guy that can win you games in the fourth quarter. He's the guy that can – yeah, look. So think about it this way. The Bills had a pretty good defense last year, all right? They held – in the playoff game, they held the Jaguars to 10 points and couldn't score more than 10 points to actually win the game on offense.
Three.
Right. They scored 3 points. How many games, when you think about it, this is not to take shots at Tyrod Taylor or anything like that, but how many games the teams just shut down Tyrod Taylor and the offense could not get going? And I think they want to be a lot better than that. They want to have a guy that they can trust to call different audibles and different things at the line of scrimmage, a guy that can pull the trigger and make every throw here in this stadium, in the wind, all of that stuff. And they didn't have that last year, and they haven't had that for a long time here. But this coaching staff didn't have it last year, and I think they want to be better than 31st in passing.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Donald, changing subjects here. Mike Pereira, you know him, right? He's on NFL on Fox. He's mm-hmm. the former head of officiating the NFL. We spent a lot of time a couple of days ago talking with various people, including Lorenzo Alexander, about the helmet hit rule, the new lowering the helmet hit. Mike Pereira says the new lowering the head rule is going to be impossible to officiate. Impossible. And he has reasons why. We're going to hear those reasons and talk about that when we come back. It is the John Murphy Show. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive, presented by Napa Auto Parts. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
With more of the John Murphy Show.
Here until 3, John Murphy, Donald Jones, off on Monday, Easter Monday, and then Tuesday, Donald and Steve Tasker, I'll be in San Antonio. Donald, I'm getting texts and pictures from my friends who are already in San Antonio from the Michigan practice.
What are they saying? Not having
at
a good
Alamo
practice.
Dome, watching Michigan Wolverines practice. Go Blue.
At Alamo Dome, they're not having a good practice. I'm nervous.
You know how they do it. Those are the phony practices.
Oh, yeah.
They just shoot around, then they go someplace else and really mm-hmm. practice.
Shoot around for the media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fans. It looked like a lot of fans. Did I show you this picture?
That's amazing. That now that what that Alamo Dome. It's always weird to me when you see that the national championship or Final Four, because especially the ones that are in the football stadiums.
Look at all the people at the Michigan practice.
Today. Because it's like, oh my, yeah, that's a lot of people.
Thousands.
When you look at it, the stadium is so big.
Yeah.
And the court is so small in the middle of that thing. It's like, wow. You know, I remember when they had it at the AT&T Stadium, Jerry World, down in Dallas a couple of years ago. It was like, man, this court looks so small. And they have the camera from the top of the stadium.
It's tough, I think, for shooters, right, in a big building like that.
It is. It's different.
The basket just hangs there, and there's, you know, hundreds of open feet of space behind
it. It's amazing.
It.
Yeah, I mean, it's in basketball, and really in every sport, you have your home foot advantage, your home court advantage in basketball, right? Yeah. So you're used to a basket, a certain bounce, the way that thing bounces off the basket, and then you're used to a certain look. And I remember in football, when we would go and play in different domes, even up in Toronto, we had to get used to when you look up the ball, sometimes you couldn't see it at the top of the stadium, right? And so there are different things that you have to deal with and get used to. That's why they do these shoot-arounds and things in the stadium. Because for basketball, it is a different look. Now you're looking at this stadium is huge. The basket looks different. It's a big difference than what they're used to.
Let's take a few phone calls. If people want to talk about quarterbacks, I guess. Dave in Cheektowaga. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Murph? I agree. I can't agree with the last caller. I don't want to see the Bills trade up and give up that amount of assets for certainly not a guarantee. If they were going to give up all those draft picks for a if come in the draft, why didn't they just go ahead and offer two first-round picks and a second round and take Nick Foles, who is Super Bowl champion and Super Bowl MVP, more of a guarantee than any of those guys in the draft?
Is he a guarantee? Here's the reason why, Dave, and I want to get Donald in on this. I hear what you're saying. There's a chance that Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Sam Bradford, there's a chance one of those guys is going to be better than Nick Foles. In fact, I would say there's probably a good chance. What do you think?
I think it is a good chance.
Maybe two of those guys will be better than Nick Foles.
And to be honest, they'll play longer.
Yeah.
Because they're still so young. Especially Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold is, how old is he? I mean, he's like
20 years old.
Yeah, 20 years old. So this guy has a long time to play. If he has a long time to play, he has some time to develop. He hasn't even really hit his full man strength yet. So I think that's what teams are really intrigued about. These kids, they can really develop them into what they want to develop them into. Nick Foles has been in this league. You've seen what he can do. You've seen bad seasons from Nick Foles as well. You know what you have out of him. And you can look at that and say, well, that's a – And some team is going to get Nick Foles next year. I think he'll be in the Eagles training camp. I think he'll start the season with the Eagles. Some team is going to get Nick Foles and be happy with him. He's going to get paid and be a quarterback for the next 3 years for that team. And who knows? Maybe it'll be the Bills if they can't get the quarterback that they like this year.
Yeah.
But I think right now these teams are looking at these draft picks and saying these guys have potential. They have the measurables that we like. They have potential to be great quarterbacks in the future.
Can I answer your question, Dave?
Yeah, it does. You know, I was just thinking back, like, some teams, a lot of the teams that were in there this year, they were a product of a good team. I don't think Bortles, I don't think Keenum are elite quarterbacks, but
nope.
Because they had a good team around them, they made it pretty far in.
Yeah.
The other thing is that this year, we're also in dead cap jail.
Yep.
Maybe next year, if we go with what we've got and not get rid of all those assets, we can increase the quality of the team. Next year, they got a hell of a lot more money where they can invest in either free agency. And I just think you're going to build a better team. And also, what we haven't had for a long time, with all those draft picks we have, we might build a deeper team.
I got you. Yeah, good points. I wouldn't hold out too much hope that there's even next year, that there's going to be a difference-making free agent quarterback out there, Donald. Kirk Cousins this year was an anomaly, a rarity, a difference-making, potentially. I'm not a huge Kirk Cousins fan, but he's the best quarterback who's been on the open market since whenever, you know, in a long, long time.
Right.
The rest of the quarterback market in free agency, really nothing special.
Right.
So don't look for next year saying, well, we got the money, we'll get our quarterback next year in free agency. You probably won't. You probably won't.
The best quarterbacks don't hit free agency.
Right.
They really don't. And the only way you get the best quarterbacks is if you trade for them. And that means you're giving up some usually first-round picks for those guys. I mean, I just talked about a team is going to probably trade for Nick Foles once you get into the season. And if Nick Foles starts out as the starter of the Eagles and then Carson Wentz comes back and Nick Foles is actually playing well, that the Eagles are going to say, we want a first-round pick for out of 2019's draft. We want a first-round pick for Nick Foles. And that's what you're talking about giving up for Nick Foles that's not even widely regarded as a franchise quarterback.
Right.
Right? So the better quarterbacks out there, the Matt Ryans that, you know, will come up as a free agent here coming up next year, the Falcons are not letting those types of guys out the door.
Right.
Even guys that are second-tier quarterbacks, these teams do not let them out the door because you don't know – what you might have in the future or might not have. So you just don't let those guys go. You pay them the money because they are a pretty good quarterback in this league.
All right, let's get off quarterbacks for a second. Can we? You know, I get it. It's big. It's important. It's not the only thing. This happened this week. NFL owners passed a new rule about lowering the helmet contact, potential ejections, and serious penalties for those who hit with their helmet. Mike Pereira, former NFL director of officiating, now a Fox officiating analyst, he appeared this week on Sirius XM Blitz with Bruce Murray and James Lofton. Mike Pereira said the new rule is going to be impossible, not difficult, impossible to officiate. Here's what he said on Sirius XM NFL Radio.
There was a push to get to this point that's been going on for a long time. So while I'm surprised, I'm not shocked. There's more to it. And I talked to Al Riveron after this happened, and I said, please explain to me how you look at this and what are you going to say to the officials? His point to me was that it's relatively simple. Nothing's simple when it comes to their educating players or whether it's educating coaches or your own officials. This is a slippery slope because you can't take the head totally out of the game. The part that I heard today, which really does concern me, is the talk of instant replay being involved with this. And to validate if there are ejections, that if they're not ejected or should be ejected, or maybe even the reverse, much closer to the targeting rule than I thought it would be. I think it's going to be impossible to officiate. You'll see the same thing happen with this as we've seen with the crown of the helmet rule. Very few calls. I think most of it will be taken care of after the fact with potential fines.
Mike Pereira, who I consider is right on this, Donald, he said impossible. At the very least, it's going to be very difficult to officiate. And I think when you get to the ejection stage, that's when you're going to get into replay, and that's when it's going to get a little bit crazy.
You know, I say this. If I'm an actual ref, that right there, when the league came down and said, yeah, this new helmet-to-helmet rule, we're going to eject players, I would think some of the refs are like, oh, come on, man. I got to eject this guy now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that should really just come from New York. That should be something that they see up there, and they should take that out of the –
So you want
– That should, because
– In-game –
They try to do everything. They try to make other calls in game.
You're all right with that?
I'm not all right with
it. Time out. We got a call from New York. Come here. Ndamukong Suh, you're out. What? We just got the call. You initiated contact with the helmet. You're out of the game. How's that going to look? How's that going to go over?
It's not going to go over.
No.
But the refs on the field, they're trying to think about so many other things. They're going to get called under the hood anyway. So
that would be a disaster. I think it's likelier to go the way Pereira points out, after the fact fines, which, you know, if that's the way it goes, fine. But people would go berserk if they started getting calls, if the officials started getting calls, you know, their buzzer rings. Time out, I got to listen to New York now. Go over to the sideline. Oh, I'm sorry, we got to pull you out of the game.
Yeah.
Because I saw something in New York that we didn't see.
How do they do it in college right now on the targeting rule? Because they go under the hood to look and see if a guy intentionally hit somebody. If it's targeting one, targeting two, you typically get ejected from the game. I wonder, is that coming from somebody up in a booth, or is that coming from?
It's
going to be interesting.
It's going to be bad, I think, the new rule, the helmet hits. 2 days ago, we had Lorenzo Alexander sit right over there. Lorenzo, we asked him what he thinks of this rule, and his response was pretty basic. He doesn't like it. Here's what he said.
I wish people listening to the broadcast could see my face right now.
Yeah.
This is.
You got to be careful what you say. You don't want.
No, be careful what I say. I think it's a stupid rule.
I do too.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I understand the intent and where it's coming from as far as trying to eliminate injuries, concussions as much as you can from the game. But it's only so much you can do before you start changing the essence of the game. It's football. It's a contact sport. Everybody's not meant to play it. Everybody can't endure the rigors of the game. So we've made some strides in making the game safe. But this is, to me, going overboard. I don't think it was well thought out because somebody lowers their head almost every play. And just a quarterback sneak, easy one. Take the ball, you dive forward. you have lowered your head.
Mm-hmm.
I go and try to hit you. Who's getting thrown out the game? Who's getting the fine?
Right.
Not the quarterback. And he initiated the pad level that low. Mm-hmm. It's going to be me.
Lorenzo Alexander with some pretty straight talk about how much he is bothered by that rule. He stands among the most affected type player in the NFL. His position is the way he plays. Mm-hmm. Nobody other than people just like Lorenzo are going to be more affected by this rule, Donald. Look, can I tell you what I think?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to get together again in May and adjust this. They're going to remove the possibility of ejections, maybe leave just the most egregious files for ejections, and I think they're going to come up with a different way, a different language. For whatever reason, this was rushed in by the competition committee at the end of the owners' meetings. What was it, late Tuesday when that came up? I think
to
they
keep people like us talking about
yes.
It.
Well, to kind of send a signal that, see, we care about violence and how mm-hmm. players are getting hit to the head. I think it was totally rushed. I think they will back off when they meet again in May. That's my guess.
I hope so. I hope so. I hope that's what they do in May. I think they need to really look at this one and talk about it, because you can't. This is something that does, as he talked about, change the essence of the game. It changes just the overall basic play in the game. I mean, you have a certain pad level. You were always taught, get low, get low. And guys do drop their head. I mean, that's just, you want to keep your head up, but the natural thing is when your shoulder goes down, your head is going to go too. You want to keep your head up, but if you have one guy lowers his shoulder, the other guy has to protect himself, and so he's going to lower his as well. And so you have a natural helmet-to-helmet contact right there that I think they really need to look at. And you talk about just the Vontaze Burfict, Antonio Brown type of hit. That's fine. Eject that guy. But there are way too many other hits that are just straight on helmet to helmet where you have two guys come in and collide together. They both lower their shoulder pads, which your head is going to go with it. And so it's going to be helmet to helmet. And so who's going to get ejected? It's typically going to be the defensive guy. You're not going to eject the offensive guy. You're going to say he was trying to protect himself. What was the defensive guy trying to do? He's trying to protect himself as well.
Yeah, it's bad. I think it'll be changed. We'll take a break. We're back with more in a moment. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Coming up at 2 o'clock, we're going to talk a little bit more about the quarterback picture with Nate Davis from USA Today. We'll take your phone calls. Check our Twitter poll. We've been doing this since noon. Got a lot of response on this today, although not a whole lot on the telephone, but on Twitter, a heck of a lot of response. On Twitter, our question, the Bills with two first-round picks in this year's draft, which current first-rounder on the Buffalo roster will have the best season in 2018? On Twitter, with about 4,500 respondents so far, 72% of you think it'll be Tre'Davious White, 20% of you think it'll be Kelvin Benjamin, 4% say Jerry Hughes, 4% say Shaq Lawson. Give us a call and respond to that or anything else, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here is Bill on the line from Rochester. Go ahead, Bill. Welcome. You're on the show with us.
Hi, John.
Hi, Bill.
Look, the only comment I have about the quarterback situation, and I've been watching and been a fan of the Bills since Cookie Gilchrist, is, you know, you can get the best guy in the world as quarterback, but if you can't protect him on the line, he's going to be so gun-shy after the first couple of games that he's going to be useless, and so why worry about it?
So
a line that can protect the guy.
It doesn't matter who's playing quarterback? Is that what you're saying?
Well, it will matter, but it won't after he gets – once they turn the wolves at him a few times.
Yeah. I don't know. Are you worried about the current Buffalo offensive line or last year's offensive line? They were okay in pass protection.
Well, I think they could have been better.
Sure.
You know, I'm not saying they're bad, but I'm not saying – what I am saying is you can get the best quarterback in the world, and without that line, he's nothing.
Sure. I agree. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for calling. Phone lines open 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can respond on Twitter. A couple of interesting tweets. Andrew tweets in, Shaq Lawson should be traded. Do you expect that to happen? Maybe draft capital. Maybe traded. I don't know what they could get for him after a couple of years, former first rounder. I don't know if they're willing to give up on him yet either, as a matter of fact. I think they'd like to see what he has. But, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. Douglas Briggs Jr., as we talk about first rounders and which first rounder is going to have the best year for the Bills in 2018. Douglas Briggs Jr. tweets in my eyes, Jerry Hughes is the best first rounder on our roster. It's crazy to think we swapped Calvin Shepard for him, isn't it? We definitely gained from the Colts' loss. He's primed to have a great year. He got help up front, and our scheme fits him. He goes on to say, go blue, Michigan. But I think that's a good point about Jerry Hughes. You know, with Ndamukong Suh coming on, Trent Murphy coming on, Donald made this point earlier, it would seem that Jerry Hughes is going to get maybe a little less attention from opposing offensive lines, and then maybe things will open up a little bit more for Jerry Hughes this year. He needs to have a better year, but it's not all his fault the last couple of years. I think he's definitely a guy who could have a big year. He would be the guy I'd vote for. And if you ask me which current first-round pick on the Buffalo roster is going to have the best season, I would vote for Jerry Hughes. Call here from Paul in Lancaster. Paul, welcome. You're on the air with us. Go ahead, Paul.
A question about the drop-off in talent between the top four named quarterbacks in the draft and the next one or two. And number two, if the Bills decide to use 12 and 22 for other player positions we need, can you make some comments on the 2019 quarterback class? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. We talked about this. We've had this question a couple times. We should probably get a guest on to help us. There's no level of quarterback in 2019, at least yet. Somebody could emerge in next year's college football season. But there aren't the type of quarterbacks you have in this draft, at least not a lot of them. Your first point about the first four against the remaining two, and I'll go the first four being Sam Darnold, Jay Rosen, Jay Allen, and Baker Mayfield. Right? Can we agree those are the top four? I think most people would agree that. Mason Rudolph would be in the next level, you know, the next tier of quarterbacks, I would think, in this draft, right? And the Louisville quarterback, Lamar Jackson, would be in the next two. And I think, you know, this goes to a question we had with Greg Cosell yesterday. He talked about strengths of quarterbacks. I think when you talk about Rosen in particular, you're talking about the greatest arm talent of this group. Sam Darnold, maybe the best compilation of everything you need, arm talent, leadership capability, physicality. He's got youth on his side. Josh Allen, rather, from Wyoming, you know, a huge man who has a tremendously strong arm. Baker Mayfield, we've talked about him a lot the last few days from Oklahoma, a little bit on the shorter side, but great traits as a quarterback, you know, passing and mobility. And then there's just a drop-off when it comes to Mason Rudolph and Lamar Jackson. To what extent, I don't know. All six of them could wind up in the first round. I think Donald and I had the discussion the other day, how many first-round quarterbacks, what's the over-under? I would say the over-under is going to be like 4.5. Four of them, I think, almost clearly in the first round, maybe a fifth. Maybe Jackson goes in the fifth as well. But we'll see. You know, Jackson just is a different style than the top four. There is a difference, though. And everybody's got their favorite, and I acknowledge that and appreciate that. And you should have a favorite. It's fun to have a favorite guy in this draft. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with Nate Davis of USA Today about his favorite quarterbacks, about Odell Beckham Jr., where he might wind up in the NFL if he does leave the New York Giants, and a lot more. More on the Twitter poll and more of your calls coming up in the third and final hour of the show as well. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Quiet day at One Bills Drive. The Bills did some business late yesterday, though, signing cornerback Philip Gaines to the roster. Gaines, 27 years old, spent the last three seasons as a backup cornerback for the Kansas City Chiefs. He was Kansas City's third-round draft pick in 2014. Gaines expected to provide depth in the secondary for Buffalo behind projected starters Tre'Davious White and Vontae Davis. He started three games for the Chiefs last season. Philip Gaines with 30 tackles, three pass breakups for Kansas City, now with the Buffalo Bills. The Bills, one of several teams that are going to get a pre-draft visit from Oklahoma quarterback Baker Mayfield. According to Robert Klemko of SI.com, the Bills are bringing in Mayfield for a pre-draft visit, the fourth time he has met with Buffalo Bills officials. They talked to him at the Senior Bowl and at the Combine and put him through a private workout already. They have 30 on-site visits here in Orchard Park, and Baker Mayfield reportedly is going to be one of them. Mayfield also scheduled to visit the Browns, the Giants, the Jets, the Broncos, the Dolphins, and the Arizona Cardinals. New quarterback for the Houston Texans, a veteran, Brandon Whedon's going back to Houston. The free agent last played for that franchise in 2015, last time he appeared in an NFL game. Whedon, with a six-year career, six wins, 19 losses as a starter, has thrown 31 touchdowns, 30 interceptions, 58% pass completion rate in his career. Brandon Whedon coming back to the Houston Texans. Buffalo Sabres going to Nashville to play the Nashville Predators tomorrow. First game of a two-game road trip. They move on to play Toronto before returning home against Ottawa next week, April 4th. Sabres last night jumped out to an early lead against Detroit, but gave it up. They lost to the Red Wings 6-3. Casey Mittelstadt, the newest Buffalo Sabre, scored an assist in his NHL debut. He recorded the first assist of his career in the third period as he helped Evan Rodriguez score a goal. Sabres at Nashville tomorrow night. And Cavaliers coach Tyronn Lue is planning to rejoin the team as an observer against the New Orleans Pelicans tonight, according to ESPN. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones. I want to ask you about Brandon Whedon. Don't let me forget to ask you about Brandon Whedon.
Okay.
I know this will go right in your wheelhouse. You will love this question.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know already where I'm going with that. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised
I'm looking
Brandon
forward to, I was.
Yeah. Who isn't? Anyway, quarterbacks, NFL, joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a man who's been covering the NFL for a couple of decades now. He is NFL writer and editor for USA Today. Happy to have Nate Davis on the line with us. Nate, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, decade plus, John. Don't date me too much.
Okay, yeah, decade, a little bit more than one decade anyway. Hey, let me get it from you. Brandon Whedon still bouncing around the league. I was going to ask Donald this question. I'll start with you. You're a league observer. This, to me, is a kind of argument that would say, wait a minute, Brandon Whedon, why not Colin Kaepernick at this point, right? Isn't that really?
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of, I mean, what are we talking about? If Brandon Whedon has a job and Colin Kaepernick does not?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this is Brandon's second stint with the Texans.
Yeah.
Maybe even third, but at least second. And I think the same thing came up last year when Brandon signed with the Titans. And it seemed like Kaepernick would probably be a better guy to back up Marcus Mariota, given that, and you know, to me it does to some degree come down to a matter of style. But, I mean, there are certain places where you know, even if you don't think Colin Kaepernick, you know, throw out the protests and that kind of stuff. But, I mean, just based on the way that Colin Kaepernick plays the game, and, oh, by the way, he's clearly one of the top 64, you know, quarterbacks in the country. He's surely a guy that a team like the Texans can more easily adapt to behind Deshaun Watson. And you would think, you know, behind Marcus Mariota, than a guy like Brandon Whedon who's going to sit in the pocket and try to do the best he can. But
just
on merit, you know, it's kind of hard to figure. Although I guess, you know, with some of the stuff we've heard from Texans ownership, really not surprising either.
Right. Now, I'll take it a step further for you, Nate. Johnny Manziel throwing. Now, he's been throwing at other teams, other schools, pro days, and throwing with guys. But is it interesting that you see so much talk about Johnny Manziel? Are teams really interested in him, or is that just a media thing right now?
My understanding is several teams, you know, at least took him aside and talked to him, particularly at that Texas A&M Pro Day. I mean, obviously a lot of teams were there to see guys like, you know, Christian Kirk and others. So, you know, that worked out well for Johnny, probably better than the San Diego one. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, guys obviously tend to get second chances in the NFL. They're not in Kaepernick. But it seems like at least in Johnny's favor, you know, that he's getting his life together. You know, I still suspect that it would be probably a better chance that he may have to go up to Canada and prove his game up there before somebody decides to really roll the dice on him, but we'll see.
Let me say this about Manziel. I was thinking about this earlier today. I have enormous respect for Bucky Brooks from NFL Network, NFL.com. Mm-hmm. Did either you, Nate, nor you, Donald, see this tweet from Bucky today? Here it is. No one will want to hear this, he says, quite accurately. No one will want to hear this, but Johnny Manziel's tape with Cleveland is not as bad as you think. He goes on to say, I can see why teams are checking in with a Heisman Trophy winner after the buzz started building, after scouts saw him at Pro Days. If he handles his business off the field, he's getting a shot. I think Bucky Brooks knows what he's talking about. That got my attention. I said, holy mackerel, is Johnny Manziel going to get back in the league?
See, for me, I think, like Nate is saying, he's going to have to go up there and really prove it in Canada first.
Canada? Okay.
Yeah, and then he'll get another shot if he plays well up there.
I'd have to look at it more. I remember that I think Johnny's first NFL game was actually in Buffalo. I remember him running one up the middle for a touchdown. But I can't say I've looked at all of his tape by any stretch, but I do remember his first start against the Bengals And he very much looked like a underprepared guy who was in way over his head. So yeah. there is some awful tape of him Browns uniform, but
yeah.
By the same token, they certainly didn't have the best players around him.
All right, we're off topic a little bit. We're with Nate Davis, who is the NFL writer, editor for USA Today. We started our show today, Nate, talking about Odell Beckham. A week ago, I suggested that maybe the Giants might be ready to move on. You have written about the six teams that are the best fits for Odell Beckham Jr., but let me start with this. Are the Giants really going to make a deal? Do you think he's not going to be playing for the New York Giants this year?
I think it's really going to take that kind of an offer that blows them out of the water, and I think that's pretty much what they've been telegraphing with. No player is untouchable. I mean, you could if you gave the Packers the next 50 first round draft picks that you own, maybe you could get Aaron Rodgers. I think there's always a conversation to be had. And obviously Odell's given them some pause with some of the off-the-field stuff. And, this isn't the first time that John Mara has expressed the disappointment. Certainly Jerry Reese had in the past before, he left. But, I think there's also a lot of truth, and you can't quit on talent. Whether the Giants draft a quarterback or stick with Eli, and it sure looks like they're sticking with Eli for the next year or two, you want Odell as a guy that's going to help you win now. You're going to want Odell as a guy that's going to help a young quarterback play. You want Odell because he's probably one of the top 10 players in the league. And, obviously you're going to want some concessions from him to, continue the maturation on the field, not put himself in some of these spots and some of these self-inflicted, media gaps that he makes. But hard to say you wouldn't want that guy on your team, regardless of circumstance. Whether you think you're going for a Super Bowl this year or whether you're, rebuilding to get back to that point 2 or 3 years from now.
Nate, if they were to trade an Odell Beckham, how hurtful would that be for Eli Manning and the rest of that offense? I mean, we know quarterbacks like to throw to their guys, and Odell Beckham, since Victor Cruz has been out of the picture there, Odell Beckham has been that guy for Eli Manning. We saw how different it was for him last year as Eli Manning ended up getting benched. How hurtful would that be if they traded Odell Beckham away?
Well, I mean, given he's his partner there for Dirty Dancing, I'm sure it will be very hurtful. on the field, obviously Eli's a guy that knows he's on the back end, and probably only got a couple holes left. So I'm sure that Eli would advocate for Odell and say, hey, I've got two or three more cracks at this, and certainly I want the best players around me. So. That would probably not send a great message to him. But then again, it also depends on what you get back. I mean, they've got a good young players there. Brandon Marshall's still there. Evan Engram, is a rising star. And if you're able to come away from the draft with a Calvin Ridley and the Saquon Barkley, and maybe trading Odell gets you another edge rusher and another guy that starts in your offensive line. I'm sure that would go a long way towards satisfying Eli, and maybe those are better ways to help you win now. Than having a receiver that sometimes goes off the rails on you and then has a little bit of an injury issue in the league. But, either way, obviously, I think if you're going to deal with Eli Manning and the Giants, I don't think you can tear it down. You got to do this rebuild on the fly. And obviously, I would think that any major trade like that, you would at least have some type of conversation with Eli first.
What about this? Do you think Odell Beckham is bluffing, or do you think he'll really sit out the season if he doesn't get the contract that he wants?
Hard for me to envision him sitting out, but I also kind of empathize with his position. I mean, he did get hurt last year in a preseason game. I want to say it was in Cleveland. It was never really right after that point, and obviously the ankle gave way early in the season. So I think probably if anybody, you can kind of understand why Odell is concerned about training camps and concerned about getting hurt unnecessarily going into a contract year. So I think that's part of the reason he's got that stance now. But by the same token, I think if you're the Giants or any team, you'd rather get this thing done now and not let it linger, and then you find yourself in the position of having the franchise tag deal or whatever else might be entailed after the season, given what you see around the league with guys like Kirk Cousins and Le'Veon Bell and then the headaches that cause those players and those teams.
Nate, on your list of six, you call them realistic destinations for Odell Beckham Jr., you've got the Rams, and there's a number of reports now. Odell's talking to friends on the Rams saying, I'd be up for that. Rams players saying, we'd love to have him. Is that a likely destination if, in fact, he is traded?
Well, I think you got a couple factors there. I mean, obviously, the Rams are not afraid of making these big splashy moves. They're not afraid of bringing bring in a big personalities into their locker room. Certainly he would fill a need there for a team that lost Sammy Watkins as kind of its deep threat. But you know, I think they've also got the cap. They got a ton of cap room next year, so they've got the wherewithal to get that contract done with them. And you know, given Odell's lifestyle and broad interest, I think Los Angeles would probably be a great fit for him. So I think you put all those factors together. Yeah, that's one that works really well theoretically on the field and off the field for all parties. You know, provided the Rams were a team that could come up with the kind of package that would entice the Giants to pull the trigger, which is probably obviously you know the biggest obstacle here.
With Nate Davis, NFL writer, editor for USA Today. A week or two ago, Nate, you put up a post about free agency, and you talked about the, you know, the 10 shrewdest free agent signings. You've got number one on your list, the Bills signing of A.J. McCarron. Why do you think that's the most shrewd free agent signing in this offseason so far?
Well, memory serves, A.J. got a two-year deal for $10
million. Yep.
And he's going to be your starting quarterback. And, you know, I don't think anyone's going to say he's probably in the top 20 in the league right now, and that's mostly obviously based on a small sample size of work. But when you look at guys like Sam Bradford pulling down $20 million a year, you know, AJ is going to be pulling down $5 million a year. I think at least in terms of cost-benefit ratio, and, you know, we're talking about a team, obviously, you know, I think we can all agree is looking for a bridge guy. And I think they were looking for a style, obviously, different than what Tyrod Taylor bought. So I think given all those factors, and also given that I think AJ probably could have held out a little longer, because I think at that point the Bills were kind of the last team standing that needed a quarterback. I think they got a pretty good deal on him for $5 million a year.
Now you said you think he'll be the starter, and all signs, or the things that the Bills have done would get you to believe that they want to trade up to get a quarterback. If they were to draft one, let's just say, in the top five, one of these top four quarterbacks, you still think McCarron would be the starter day one?
Probably so. I mean, it depends who they got. If they got a guy like Josh Allen, who I know has been linked to the Bills quite, you know, extensively, I think McCarron probably a good shot he would start. I think Josh Allen is the guy, you know, in this quote-unquote elite, you know, batch of four or five, whatever you want to call it, quarterbacks. He's probably the guy that could benefit most from sitting a little, learning the NFL game and that kind of stuff. So if Josh Allen were the pick, I think probably a great chance that A.J. McCarron is your bridge quarterback. But even if it's, you know, if it were Sam Darnold or Baker Mayfield, I still think a good chance that you go into the season with A.J. unless, you know, a guy coming in really just blows everyone away in training camp and preseason and takes that job away.
Hey, Nate, how many quarterbacks in the first round do you think in a month?
Yeah, I think the over-under is probably 4.5. And I think it's probably going to be 4. You know, I'm not sure that Lamar Jackson is really helping his case with some of the obstacles he's kind of created for himself off the field. And just based on his style of play, you know, he's another guy that probably could really benefit going to a team that's got a bridge quarterback in a place like Jacksonville or whatever. But I think it's going to end up being 4 guys in the first round, and Lamar is kind of on that second border. And then I guess I would say too that if you are a team that wants a quarterback, it probably benefits, you know, there may be somebody out there that trades back into the first round because you always like to have, you know, that fifth year of control with the fifth year option on a first round pick that you don't get with a second rounder.
You know, Nate, Murph and I were talking about this earlier today. It's hard to believe that a guy like Lamar Jackson would make himself unavailable to these teams when they're trying to reach out to him. The 40 thing is one thing, but it's hard to believe that he would make himself unavailable and make it hard for the teams to reach him.
I told you, Donald, I don't believe that that's the case. What is the case there? What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard those same reports, and I think it's not so much Lamar, but I mean, clearly there's a bit of an issue with his mother being his main, you know, representative. He doesn't have an agent. And I'm just not sure that, you know, I don't think he's ignoring them. I don't want to speak for her either, but it just seems like some of this bureaucratic stuff isn't going quite as smoothly. You know, I know we kind of had trouble getting a hold of him and other organizations as well, just trying to get, you know, interview requests, like them getting back to us. It's not, you know, sometimes you find yourself waiting for a response and you may never get one. So can't say it's all that surprising, but it is surprising, you know, when you it's one thing when somebody ignores an interview request from a reporter. It's another thing when you ignore an interview request for a job offer from an NFL team. I mean, that's kind of what I'm talking about, where I think he's unnecessarily putting himself in a bad position.
Do you think not running the 40 hurts him?
I'm not sure that it hurts him, you know, and you can kind of see why he wouldn't have done it yesterday. If he'd run the 40 and he pulled a hammy or something, then he's obviously not going to be able to go through pro day drills. And I think, I do kind of co-sign that thought out there that he's doing everything he can to kind of reinforce, hey, I'm a quarterback. I'm not Cordell Stewart. I'm not a slot receiver. I'm not a return guy or anything else. So I think by not running the 40, he's just trying to make that statement to everyone that he's going to play quarterback in the NFL. That's what he wants to do.
Hey, Nate, thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today. We appreciate it. Good talking with you.
Okay, good catching up with you guys. Thanks.
Nate Davis, NFL writer, editor for USA Today, joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh.
You ever ignore calls?
All the time. You do too. You ignore my calls. I know that.
No, I don't.
I think you have in the past.
I don't know. In the last couple of years, I don't know how many times you've actually called me. It might have been once.
Well, because you don't pick up when I call you.
Oh.
Let's talk about Lamar Jackson for a minute. I'm telling you, Donald, I think it's agents complaining to, you know, media, and they are reporting this. Mike Mayock, NFL Network. He maintains that some teams are having trouble arranging meetings with Lamar Jackson. Here's the quote from Mike Mayock. I've had several teams tell me they're having trouble just getting to set up appointments to meet with him, not just workout, but appointments to meet with him. Bucky Brooks tweeted out, I don't know why Jackson elected to sit out on testing. Teams simply wanted to confirm his speed to help them compare his explosiveness to others. Look, I'm not saying Lamar Jackson is following the right path on everything he's doing, but they know, you know, how many times do people tell you, we look at the tape? Right. You know, interviews we've done recently here, we look at the tape, we see how he plays. How much is he hurting his draft status?
Exactly, not running the 40. I mean, you can see how fast the guy is on tape. And it's not like he's running against everybody slow out there. I mean, he's running against other college athletes that are fast. So you can see this guy's athletic with the ball in his hands, and you can also see him throw the ball. And so I think he really just wants to reaffirm that look, I play quarterback. And if I come out here and run a 4.35, you might have teams say, oh, yeah, he's a wide receiver. And I want to show everybody that I can play quarterback. Right. And so I think that's what he's doing with that.
And I can understand to a certain extent why he'd be sensitive about that. I mean, he won the Heisman Trophy as a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
He shouldn't have to. He probably would react negatively to somebody saying, yeah, the former Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, he should be a wide receiver. I understand why that might affect him and bother him a little bit. But on the other hand, he can't be thin-skinned about this. I mean, part of what teams are looking for are quarterbacks, players who have thick skin, who don't, you know, react to negative comments, who don't care what is said about them. So in a way, Lamar Jackson is kind of revealing a little bit about his approach and his, thin-skinned approach by the way he's handled some of this, it appears.
Well, you know, we all know some quarterbacks that have had some thin skin over the years.
Former and others.
Right. But, you know, it's interesting because I know players, a lot of players, that coming out of high school when they're being recruited by colleges and the college coach will tell you, look, we're recruiting you as a DB and not a wide receiver. And that kid is like, nah, I want to play wide receiver. So they don't end up going to that school because of that. And it's the same thing coming into the league. And I understand guys really want to you want to play the position that you've been playing your entire life. And he's been playing – quarterback. I seen an interview where he said, look, I've never caught a pass in my life.
Yeah.
So I can understand why he's like, I don't want to play wide receiver. I've never done it. But at the same time, it does come a point where it's like, I understand that. But if these teams are truly, truly serious about this, you got to look at it and don't like hurt yourself in this whole draft process where you're losing out on millions and millions of dollars because you don't want to run a 40 because you only want to show that you can play quarterback. Or, I mean, if everybody knows in this league, you're not going to take your quarterback and have him playing receiver as well. But at the same time, the more you can do, the more valuable you are to a team, you know. So it's hard for me. I've never been in that position. And I know guys that they – look, this is the position I play. This is what I want to play. But I think you got to be smart about everything, and that's in taking the calls. That's if you need to run your 40 or not, and that's listening to some of the teams that say we might want to look at you at wide receiver as well.
But he's the right to say no.
He has the right to say that. Yep.
No, thank you. I'd prefer not to. I don't blame him.
He
won the Heisman Trophy as a quarterback.
He did.
He was the most outstanding player in college football as a quarterback.
Yep.
And as you said, he's never caught a pass.
Yeah.
Why would he do anything different?
I mean, the most recent we've seen out of this was Tim Tebow. You know, when everybody – once he got to the NFL and was playing quarterback, then everybody was like, you should play tight end or H-back or something like that. And he's like, no, I'm a quarterback. I won the Heisman Trophy as a quarterback. I've been playing this my entire life. I don't want to play anything else. And that, I think, ultimately hurt him. Because he might still be playing football, but he's out of the league and playing baseball.
Hey, there's an interesting question that comes to us on Twitter, Donald. I'm going to get some more phone calls about what else, quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. There's a tweet about quarterbacks. Rick Rodriguez tweets into you and me. Did you see this one?
No, my computer's dead.
Why don't you bring a power cord out, man?
Because you take both of them.
You can have one.
Well, I mean, I was going to ask you once we got – every. Yeah, it's been a lot lately.
Rick Rodriguez tweet. Maybe it's better if you don't have a computer. I think you pay attention more if you don't have a computer. Rick Rodriguez. He's good for it. Rick Rodriguez. I'd like for you and me, to pretend Tom Brady was a college graduate in this year's draft and his Michigan stats and his performance at the Combine, and would you still pick one of the four horsemen, the top four this year, over Tom Brady? That's an interesting question, and when I think about it, I'd say, you know what, yeah. If you're telling me, Rick Rodriguez, that Tom Brady coming out of Michigan, that's all we have on him?
Right.
That we don't have the Super Bowl championships and the Hall of Fame NFL career? Yeah, you'd have to say, based on what you know about Brady's college performance and about, you know, Darnold and Rosen and Allen and who's the fourth?
Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield.
Mayfield. You would put them ahead of Tom Brady, right?
Yeah. Tom Brady, I mean, he wasn't even a full-time starter at Michigan.
Right.
Until, you know, he wasn't like this All-American coming out of Michigan or any of that stuff.
Now, what does that tell us? That the draft is crazy.
Right.
It's up in the air how good these guys are going to be. I don't know. Is that the point, Rick Rodriguez, you're trying to make? I don't know. This is why Twitter doesn't work on this. Give us a call. It's a great question. Mm-hmm. It's thought-provoking.
Oh, yeah.
What the take I get from it is that, yeah, that's how crazy the NFL draft is.
You know,
that you would put these four ahead of Tom Brady.
Tom Brady wasn't this dude slid all the way back into the draft. He wasn't even like a second-round pick or something like that. So in this year's draft, he'd probably be all the way back in the fifth or sixth round or somewhere back there based on, do you take away the NFL stuff? Based on him just coming out of college, yes, he probably would have been way back there.
Behind his behind Lamar Jackson.
Behind Lamar Jackson.
Mason Rudolph.
Right. He might have been behind Loletta.
Kyle Loletta.
Yeah, those guys as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting question, Rick. Love to talk more about that. Give us a call. We're going to get more phone calls up in a moment, plus NFL True and False coming up. Come on back. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. Donald and I coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We got more. We got about a half hour more in the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Thanks for tuning in today. A couple of tweets on various things. Vinny Piscopio tweets, and this is interesting. The callers that we get on the show who do not want a quarterback are apparently content to be the Patriots' whipping boys going forward. I don't know about that. I'll tell you what. It is different, Donald. The response and the interaction we have with Bills fans on Twitter. Bills fans on Twitter, this is just my observation, very much in favor of trading up, getting the quarterback. The phone calls we take, much less so. More people are conservative about don't want to give up that many draft picks.
I wonder why that is.
I think it has something to do with the makeup of these groups. You know, the callers may be a little bit older.
I like how you put that, the makeup.
The demographics, you know, callers may be a little older, a little more conservative. The folks on Twitter may be a little bit more reckless, you know. I might submit that folks on Twitter don't think about things as deeply maybe as some others. What are you laughing about? It's all reaction on Twitter. That sucks tweet. No, that sucks tweet. You suck tweet. You know, that's how people do on, that's what you do on Twitter, right?
It is. It's fast.
It's fast, and sometimes it
like
lacks
the Family Feud button.
Yes.
Who can hit
it's
this
fast?
The
and sometimes lacks any thought at all. So we'll take both, all kinds of reaction. I love getting that in. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Our Twitter poll question today, our central question today, The Buffalo Bills with two first-round draft picks. They don't get that often. Chris Brown wrote about it on a post on BuffaloBills.com. And which first-round pick on the current Bills roster is going to have the best season? On Twitter, we offered up a couple of suggestions. You may have somebody else in mind. There's only a few. Is it Jerry Hughes going to have the best season for the Bills as former first-round pick on the current roster? Is it Tre'Davious White? Yes, according to 72% of you. 20% say Kelvin Benjamin. 4 say Hughes. 4 say Lawson. I find that interesting.
Let me say this.
Go ahead and say it.
You know, and none of us want to see this, and I don't think that this is going to happen. As Tre'Davious works hard, unless he got hurt, you know, that would be the only way I think I see him actually having a tough season. I think he works hard enough. He's smart enough. He will never get, like, too much of a big head or anything like that. He's going to come in, and he's going to have a good season. He had a good season last year, and it's going to be hard to really – I mean, he has another season like that. You're talking about a Pro Bowl player. And he should have been in the Pro Bowl. But we all know that sometimes that sophomore slump is a real thing, you know, where guys just don't – they come in and they don't have the same type of season they had in their rookie year for various reasons. Some guys don't work as hard because they had a good season and now they're feeling themselves. Other times you have just teams understand and the opposing – players or opposing teams understand what it is that you do. They understand your tendencies and things like that, and they take advantage of it. They can see what you're weak at, and they take advantage of it. And so guys might not have the same season. So I know a lot of people are, you know, saying, yeah, Tre'Davious White. And I think that's just based on, once again, it's Twitter. It's based on, you know, people looking at last year and saying that Tre'Davious is going to have a great, great season again this year. But I think you got to look at the thing and look at the big picture. I think Kelvin Benjamin is going to have a good year because he's in a contract year. If he's healthy, he's going to come in here ready to go, ready to prove to every team in the NFL, along with the Bills, that he's a number one receiver in this league. The Panthers traded him away for a reason. They did not feel like he was their number one receiver anymore, and so they were willing to trade him away. I think he wants to prove I'm a number one guy, and he wants to get paid like that. And so he's going to come in and have a great season.
Here's a call from Paul in Fredonia. Go ahead, Paul. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
I love the show. I'm in Fredonia. I can't take another month of this. It's going to kill me.
How do you think we feel?
I don't tweet, but I want you to know that I give the Bills. Last year, I heard Mel Kiper gave him a B+. I'd agree. I love the four starters, but they passed on Watson and Mahomes. I'm a draft guy. I loved Watson coming out of that program and winning the national championship. But that's okay. I mean, my heart, like most other Bills fans, is set on getting a quarterback in this draft. I think the majority of people aren't calling because I will be extremely disappointed if they don't take some of those 9 draft picks that they accumulated and use them for the purpose that they traded for. And that's to trade up and get one of those top 4 quarterbacks, whichever one or two they think is the best. I just cannot see the Bills not having a process or a plan in place. I'm hopeful that maybe Bean made an agreement with Cleveland when they traded Tyrod for that pick 65. I'm hoping that there was some kind of agreement that they could trade back in if they needed to get up and get a quarterback. But I will be extremely disappointed if they don't get one. And I agree with Donald about Kelvin Benjamin, as long as we have a quarterback who can throw him the ball. Karen was a backup to Dalton for the last 4 years. I hope he does well, but I'd be very disappointed to think that he's going to be our starter even 8 games into the season. So thank you so much for your time, and I love the show.
Thanks, Paul. Good points. Really good points.
Yeah,
I get the disappointment part, but Again, I mentioned this earlier in the show, and you've mentioned it already over the last week or two. It's going to be hard to move up to get one of those premium quarterbacks. It's going to be really hard. The Jets move a couple of Saturdays ago, I think, is what really brought that home to everybody.
Yeah, it shows you how hard it is. They only moved 3 spots and gave up 3 picks to do it. So the Bills are talking about just getting inside the top 10. And really, you need to get inside the top 6, the top 5, to get one of those guys. And teams are going to want a lot because you're asking them to move outside the top 10. And
there are other suitors for quarterbacks, too. It's
right,
not like
exactly.
It's the Bills and 2 others. It's the Bills and, like, 5 others looking for quarterbacks.
Exactly. So, I mean, those teams might want to just sit there and take somebody. Nope. You know, they take the call. Maybe they're ignoring calls like Lamar Jackson. Bills? Oh, no. 716? Oh, not taking that call. But no, I just think it's going to be hard, and I think the Bills are still going to go for it, but there will be certain parameters that they will have, and they will not.
And they should have parameters.
Right, exactly. We can't get outside this. And once a team says that's not enough, all right, well, maybe we got to sit here at 12 and hope that one of these guys falls, or you go in a different direction.
Call from Byron on the line. Byron, is that you? Are you there, right there on the line with us?
Yes, I'm here, sir.
Hi, how are you? Good. Thanks for being with us.
Doing
good.
I think we got a good chance to trade up from 12 to 7.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of Lamar Jackson and Baker Mayfield.
Okay. Well, I think I don't know if any team would take Lamar Jackson that high, and I could be totally wrong, but I think you will see Baker Mayfield go. You could see Baker Mayfield go in the top 7, so that could make sense.
Thanks for your call, Lamar. There's some weird calls here. I'm not going to get into the weird ones. This one hopefully not too weird. Brad, hello, Brad. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. First of all, I don't know how Shaq Lawson got 4% of a vote on that. It's crazy. I'm hoping to use him for trade bait. I'd say Tre'Davious White for sure on the list before he got up there. But I called about Lamar Jackson. I read an article on the Wunderlich test. And I know, you know, how much stock do you put in the Wunderlich test, right? I mean, Dan Marino had one of the lowest scores ever, and look what he did. But regardless, they had the scores for the quarterbacks, and it says, in essence, that the one position you would maybe pay attention to this Wunderlich test, because obviously you got to be very smart to play quarterback, quick decisions, good decision maker. They had the scores, and you're supposed to score at least a 25 or higher, they said. And Mayfield was a 25, so he's right there. The other guys were higher, and Josh Allen was the highest. Lamar Jackson was at 13. And that just, it was alarming to me. I'm like, 13? He's not even close to 25. They didn't have Mason Rudolph, so I wanted to see what his was. But how much do you put into that, being that if you're drafting a quarterback, and said they did take him at 12 or 22, like the Wunderlich scoring that low at 13, would that be alarming to you, or would something keep you away from him or not?
No.
No?
No.
Doesn't get your attention at all?
I mean, it's going to get your attention, but ultimately it's all about football IQ. The Wunderlich test doesn't ask you one question about football. I mean, there are math questions on there. They're like some crazy stuff on there, and you get a certain amount of time to actually take the test. And I remember sitting in there taking the test, which I scored pretty high on my test. I remember sitting there taking the test, and the questions, I'm like, what? This has nothing to do with football. You know?
Yeah, but so, you know that going in.
Yeah, you definitely know that going in. But when you get in there and you actually take it, you're like, wow, this is actually funny.
It's an intelligence test.
Yeah, it is. It's like taking SAT again.
Yeah.
They give you a certain amount of time. But for me, playing quarterback, yeah, you want to be smart. You need to be smart, but it's football IQ. You got to understand how to read a defense. You're not going to be out there on the field answering an algebra answer or something like that. You know, that's not what we're talking about here. So for me, the guy can play football. He played it in college. He can play it in the league. If you feel like, and you get him up there on the board, and you're actually testing him on the board on different plays and different defenses, and you can tell this guy understands football, that's all that matters.
Okay. Thanks for your calls. Let's play NFL True or False. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. This is interesting. You know, we talked and went through the teams that Baker Mayfield is going to visit with, the long list. How about the Patriots? The Patriots will draft a quarterback in this year's draft. Bob Kraft at the owners' meeting had a quote about this. He told ESPN's Mike Reese, I'm going to put my fan hat on. Obviously, at some point, we have to draft a quarterback. But after what happened in the 08 season when we lost Tom Brady, how many people would have said that Matt Castle would have led us to an 11-5 record? I put my faith and confidence in Bill Belichick. So essentially, Bob Kraft says the Patriots have to obviously draft a quarterback soon. True, false?
True.
True. Of course,
yeah,
it's true.
I mean, it's obvious for obvious reasons. Tom Brady is old. And Tom Brady's not going to just play forever. So you know his career is coming to an end. And I think, to be honest with you, they're looking at Jimmy Garoppolo and how he looked in those five games out there. And they're like, uh-oh, this is Bob Kraft.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, I think we made a wrong move here.
Yeah.
This guy looks like he can be good for the next 15 years. So, yeah, I think they want to get one. And I don't know if they'll take one in the first round, in the second round, but I think they're going to take one. I think Bill Belichick wants to leave with having a succession plan for Tom Brady.
Kevin Patra, around the NFL writer for NFL.com, wrote this story that I'm looking at here. The Patriots have used fairly early draft picks in recent years on quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Jacoby Brissett, 2016, a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
third round.
Yep.
Jimmy Garoppolo, 2014, second round. Ryan Mallett, all the way back in 2011, third round. So what's that, 7 years? They've drafted three quarterbacks, and two of them in the third round, one in the second.
And
so that's pretty fairly early to get quarterbacks. So obviously, right. It's not like they've been ignoring quarterbacks down the
road. No, they haven't. And they were drafting those guys still knowing that Tom Brady's here.
Yeah.
Now they know Tom Brady has a couple years left at the very most, I believe. And so you need to find somebody, because if you don't, you're going to be like the rest of these teams in the league trying to find a quarterback.
You're going to be like every other team in the AFC.
Exactly. The tables will then turn on them because every other team will have one and they won't.
NFL true or false, we both got that one is true. How about this one? Jimmy Graham signing with the Packers is the most overrated free agency move. Gordon McInnes of Pro Football Focus did a little research. He's got that listed as the number one overrated move in free agency. Let me read you what Gordon McInnes wrote about this. He writes, on paper, the prospect of Graham as a weapon for Aaron Rodgers is captivating, but in practice, it relies on Graham coming back from a bad 2017. He saw a career-low 9.1 yards per reception last season, dropped 7 of the 64 catchable passes thrown his way, second-worst drop rate of his 8-year career. Jimmy Graham to the Packers, an overrated move. I say false, and here's why. Aaron Rodgers is going to make him look good, Donald. I don't think he'll, you know, I don't think he's going to tear it up, but I think he'll have a pretty good year for them.
Yeah, I'm going to go false on this one. I think it's a really good move for them. I think the one thing that Jimmy Graham has to understand going in there, and he's coming from Seattle, so he should be used to it. Aaron Rodgers does not play inside the pocket all the time. That guy gets outside the pocket. It's different than Drew Brees. When Drew Brees was dropping back and hitting that back step, the ball was coming out. Jimmy Graham's open. He's getting it. Coming out of Seattle, he's not coming off his best seasons, and so he has to understand the system that they run out there in Green Bay is not your typical system.
NFL true or false, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Squeezing in a call here, Mark on a cell phone. Go ahead, Mark, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, guys. I was just wondering about the way the organization might go in the draft, and I'm wondering if you would agree that maybe a good way for Brandon Bean to go is to sell but not mortgage. In other words, I think he's pretty happy about the work that he and the rest of the organization did to get all these picks, 8 picks in the first 5 rounds, I believe it is. And I think that the pick that would be in play the most, if he wants to move up and get his quarterback, would be to put next year's picks in play, like the first round pick next year, perhaps high round picks next year. Because when you consider the cap situation the way it is now and the way it will be next year, he may be able to collect enough of his players that he'll be able to have a bunch of rookie contracts. He'll have money to spend on high-profile free agents. He'll be able to pay the people that he really wants to keep instead of letting these people go in order to gather assets. So I'm wondering what you think about the theory of maybe being able to keep one of the 2 picks that he has this year in the first round and the second, and still be able to pull off a move up by offering picks next year.
All right. It's an interesting proposition, Mark. I guess I'm hoping that is not the case. They're not going to have – it's very unlikely the Bills are going to go into next year's draft with 9 picks, 6 in the first 3 rounds, right? That doesn't happen often.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would rather see them not start selling off next year's draft picks, trading off next year's draft picks, knowing that you might need them. They're going to be in much better cap shape next year. They're going to be able to go out into free agency, target a few guys and get them. I know these guys like drafting players. I came across a quote. Brandon Bean was on NFL Network the other day, and his quote was, I just looked it up, "We have not arrived. We're not headed for the Super Bowl or anything. We're not making any proclamations. We're still building this one step at a time." Bean said, "We're excited about the draft capital we have acquired starting last August, and now we're excited about where we're at." I think, Donald, they look at it as a step-by-step-by-step process. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to get great this year. They're not trying to win the draft and have everybody, you know, have a parade in May down Delaware Avenue. They look at it as a step in the right direction, this draft with these picks, whether they get the quarterback or not. And I just don't think – I wouldn't look for them to – I hope that they don't get into next year's draft, because I think they're going to have the same feeling next year at this time. Hey, let's take another step forward using these picks.
Yeah, I think – and that's why I say – as you talk about, they want to get better. Obviously, you want to get great. But, I mean, it's always – it's a process. And Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have been saying that for a long time. They've been talking about building a team out through the draft since they got here. And they always talk about the process. So it leads you to believe that, I mean, they could go either way on this thing, and that's why I believe they will have true parameters on, we will not get outside trading away this many picks. You know, whether it's next year's picks or whatever the case may be, we will not do that. And if the bidding just gets too high, then we have to sit here. And I think they're perfectly okay with using all of those picks and just drafting and having a lot of guys on rookie deals that are playing for you earlier in their careers, and then hopefully find a quarterback next year or the year after or something like that. But it's truly a process, and I don't think they are going to just jump at something because everybody wants them to. Right. I think it's always going to be well thought out, whether that's the draft or whether that's free agency.
All right, we got to take a break here. We're back in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security, home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned? We had Reed Ferguson on the show, Bills long snapper, who went on a lobbying trip to the U.S. Capitol recently with his brother and a number of other former football players and current football players, all pushing for new legislation to help in research into diabetes. Here's what Reed Ferguson said about his trip to Capitol Hill.
Basically, there's a group that works called Team Tackle, a group of some football players, NFL, and my brother joined us this year. He's, still playing in college. But Team Tackle joined up with the American Diabetes Association, and a big group. We all get together and go to the Hill. And basically, we were just meeting with them for about 15 to 20 minutes each, and trying to more or less persuade them to get some more funding for diabetes research and the National Diabetes Prevention Program.
Reed Ferguson, Bill's long snapper. He'll be up here with the rest of the veterans in a couple of weeks to begin the off-season conditioning program. Also on the show today, we talk with Nate Davis, NFL reporter and editor for USA Today. Nate Davis, we asked him if Odell Beckham Jr. could actually be traded. Could that really happen? Here's what he said.
And obviously Odell's given them some pause with some of the off-the-field stuff. And, this isn't the first time that John Mara has expressed the disappointment. Certainly Jerry Reese had in the past before, he left. But, I think there's also a lot of truth, and you can't quit on talent. And, whether the Giants draft the quarterback or stick with Eli, and it sure looks like they're sticking with Eli for the next year or two, you want Odell as a guy that's going to help you win now. You're going to want Odell as a guy that's going to help a young quarterback play. You want Odell because he's probably one of the top 10 players in the league.
Donald, you think it's still a long shot that Odell Beckham Jr. is traded away by the Giants?
I do. You're talking about two first-round picks. I mean, yeah. I just don't see teams right now with Odell Beckham saying, I'm not playing without a long-term contract, number one. That's number two. Number one is all the off-the-field stuff. That right there hurts him. And then him to come out and say, well, I'm not playing without a long-term contract, teams are like, you can have him.
Where are the Giants, though, right? Are the Giants looking to trade him? They're not shopping him, was the quote from John Mara.
I don't see the Giants might be shopping him. I think you heard Dave Gettleman say you don't give up on talent.
Yes.
And I think they truly believe that. Look, if you want to give us two first-round picks, then we'll go ahead and you can have them. We'll take those two first-round picks and get somebody else good. But we're not out here just actively shopping him. We don't want to just give up on him that easy.
Hey, our Twitter poll today, the Bills with two first-round picks of their own coming up in the draft in 4 weeks. But we asked which current first-round pick on the Buffalo roster will have the best season in the upcoming year. Overwhelmingly, Tre'Davious White, the people's choice, 72% say he'll have the best year. 20% say Kelvin Benjamin. 4% said Jerry Hughes. 4% said Shaq Lawson. I would cast my vote for Jerry Hughes. We had about 5,200 votes. That's pretty impressive. I love Tre'Davious White. I just think Jerry Hughes is going to have a big year.
If we did a poll for the Final Four, percentage Michigan, what would the percentage be? Buffalo. What do you think?
To win it all?
To win it all. Who would win the Final Four?
Man, I bet it'd be – I bet, I'm guessing it would go Villanova, close Michigan second, then Loyola,
and then Kansas.
Kansas.
Yeah.
What would you vote?
I would see that. Villanova, yeah. And then Michigan, and Loyola, and Kansas.
Yeah. I'll be there, as you know. We have no show on Monday, Easter Monday. Donald will be here with Steve Tasker on Tuesday. I'll be back on Wednesday. Have a great Easter weekend, Donald.
All right, you too. With you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltenek, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, our producer, Jay Harris. Have a great holiday weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.